Tonight, you're going to hear a story about a midway project to do for baseball what NBA Jam did for basketball, and it looks really interesting. Stay tuned to hear details about that. But after the show, if you're wanting a more fast-paced, arcade-style baseball game that does exist, look for a means of playing Super Baseball 2020 or Baseball Stars 2. Those have been my favorites for decades. This is one story you'll hear tonight. This and plenty more is coming from your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, right now on the show where every gamer has a voice.
Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio live once again, back in the house, episode number 854 for this January the 31st of 2021, the last day of January. My name is Rob Roberts, joining you from our studio in Sacramento, California. Sadly, still socially distancing because it's still March 2020 for a lot of us. And joining me via the magic of Discord, say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Sup?
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right.
Nice wig.
Thank you. It's a lace front, Rob. Lace. Real lace.
Unfortunately, the podcast folks can't see that sometimes you decide to dress up a little bit for the show, which, you know, it's all... There you go. There you go. Yes, yes. Make love to the camera. Mwah, mwah. Okay. Perfect.
I decided that I had been feeling kind of crappy all day, so I was going to glam up just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I am wearing the lovely... eyeshadow palette by our local queen, Sasha Devereaux, who is talented and amazing. Look her up. She's awesome. And her palette is really good. I'm not being paid to say this.
And I said, once we can get back together in person at some point, I said, maybe we could do like a charity fundraiser for something, where if we make like, I don't know, $100, $200, we'll figure out something fair. I said that Dark Soccer could do my makeup for a show. So
you're going to be a bearded queen.
So look forward to that once COVID is over. That'll be our official COVID is over party. All right. Anyway, say hello as well to Techmaster Loki.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, good, Loki. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good. Been busy. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't tell. What is that game playing behind you tonight? I can't read the dialogue from here. I can't see.
It relates to this week.
Okay.
It is the indie RPG game called To the Moon.
Oh.
I love that game.
Yeah.
That is such a sweet game.
Okay. I see what you... Okay, To the Moon. I see what you did there. Okay. Okay. It took me a minute. Yeah, no, but it is a good game for an entirely different reason than what you're referring to here. But all right, Loki, if you're going to open that can of worms, why don't we get into our kickoff topic right off the bat and talk about what's going on? Which, okay, I'm gonna be fair, because it's funny because Bobby kind of addressed this on his show too, because we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network, VOG Network, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And if you are live with us on Sunday night, stop by our chat room because we do like to read comments from chat. So we're on right after the Bobby Blackwolf show, and Bobby on his show was kind of like, I'm not really going to talk about it because it's not really gaming news. And I actually do kind of agree to an extent. Like, this story has now far eclipsed what is just gaming news. However, the reason why I think it still qualifies for discussion here and merits discussion is because I think there's definitely an element of gaming culture that went into this and why people felt the need to save this particular stock. But I'll let Loki take it from here, even though it is a follow-up to last week, kind of. But it just it went to the moon this week.
Yeah, so basically what's happening is there is these hedge funds that have shorted GameStop stock. So what shorting means is basically in traditional stocks, when you go long, it means you're betting on a stock is going to raise in price. So you buy low and you sell high. Well, short is basically the opposite. So you borrow a stock from somebody, you sell it immediately in the hopes that it goes down, and then you buy it again low and return the stock that you borrowed, and then you make the money based off the amount that the stock dropped. Well, what happened was that these hedge funds did what's almost called like a naked short, where they overshorted the stock 140%. Now you're wondering, how the hell do you sell more stocks than exist? It's because that they're basically, you know, hedge fund A, you know, has a stock and hedge fund B borrows that stock and then immediately sells it to hedge fund C, which then borrows, you know, or hedge fund D borrows it from C, you know, so it keeps going. So you end up getting these multiples. And what they do that for is to drop the value of the stock. So they will buy up a lot of these, they'll short them, and you to a great extent to drop the price of the stock down to make money and then sell it once it goes low.
I did address this a little bit last week using turnips as an example, just as a reminder, because this is where we all learned about the stonks this year.
Actually, yes. I learned about it in high school.
Well, okay.
We played the stock market.
But did you actually, and I think a lot of economics classes probably did the fake stock market, but I don't know a lot of people who have put their own money in the stock market. I'm talking outside of 401ks and things that kind of like retirement plans do for you.
Stocks?
But,
I've invested.
You? Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I invested in the place in which I work.
Okay. But there's a lot of...
It's doing very well.
There's a lot of people who have not had any experience with any of that.
Yeah.
Until like Animal Crossing, I think really like... kind of started getting people like, oh, you know, and I think everybody kind of knew like, oh, it's a cute little play on the stock market, what's happening there. But, you know, then this started happening. And now that everybody is having to like, okay, somebody, why the fuck do I keep hearing about GameStop in the news? What the hell is going on? So many people have had to like, and I'm going to use this term, dumb it down. And believe me, there's a lot in my life I've needed to
make it accessible.
Dumbed down. Okay, sure. Make it accessible. Explain it to me like I'm five. That whole thing, right? So there's been so many people having to explain this. What's going on to people?
Yeah. So basically what's happening now is, so like you would rent a game from Blockbuster back in the day, eventually that game is due back. And so what happens is, if, for example, you have a community like Wall Street Bets that sees, hey, look at this stock is short at 140%, they're going to have to buy that when, you know, eventually to recoup those stocks, to return them. We're just going to purchase a bunch of these stocks and drive the price high. So what that does is because they're shorting it and the only way they make money is if it drops in price, they could lose an infinite amount of money because they have to buy these at some point. And so what the goal is now is there's so many people buying the stock, it's driving the price up much, much, much higher than they anticipated. So these hedge funds are losing billions of dollars and everybody's making quite a bit of money off of it because these shares, which were originally like, you know, $4 or $5 each, are now $400, $500 each. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's a quite the return on investment. And so what's happening now, though, is because there's no shares to really buy back, and even when they do buy it back, I think it's going to drive the price up a little bit, is they have, it's called a short squeeze. And so really, it's just going to skyrocket the stock. That's why everybody's holding it. They're not selling their positions. And so it's just going to keep driving the price up and up and up and up. And so this week, you saw a lot of bullshit with like Robinhood preventing people from actually buying stock. There was, you know, they were only allowing you to sell it. They were, you know, different brokers that were basically limiting the amount of trades you can do.
So it was one of those rare things that like politicians on all sides of the spectrum agreed on, was that move that Robin Hood pulled was sus as hell, basically. And that led to a whole Twitch stream that AOC did. Right. Monday night or something where she was I don't even think she was playing a game. I missed it. Sorry. I had a conflict, but I don't even think she was playing a game this time. No. I think she went on. She just did like a talking. She had guests and things like that. But she just kind of had a talk about it, which was interesting. And then, of course, I'm sure you all saw, you know, Ted Cruz tried to agree with her. And then in response, AOC definitely like snatched his fucking wig and threw it in the garbage. But I think he kind of deserved it. But anyway, I won't go there. But still, you had people on both sides that were both saying, you know, Robin Hood, well, what they did was sus.
And there's all sorts of market manipulation going on. You know, obviously there's different, CNBC has been, you know, accusing the folks on Wall Street Bets of manipulating the market, not even really calling out the hedge funds that are overshorting it. And then on top of that, they've been, you know, conveying fake information. So they've been saying that these hedge funds have already settled their shares, which you can look at the data and see, no, that's not the case. So they're trying to put it out there that, oh, yeah, yeah, they've already bought their shares back. You guys won. You can sell your stock now, trying to drive the price down. But it's so manipulative.
It does make you think, and, you know, I'm kind of watching chat, and I want to get to some of that stuff in chat. But I got two things I want to address here real quick, and then, Loki, if you have anything else you want to add. The first thing I want to address is, well, how is this still relevant to gaming? You know, that you're a video game podcast, Orange Lounge Radio. Why are you still talking about this? Because this just tangentially involves GameStop at this point. And I would argue, I think it was gaming culture that actually played into this whole thing and allowed it to happen. Because, like you said, there was this Reddit community that observed that there was this trend that was happening on Wall Street of this stock shorting. And, you know, the rumor came through, or the buzz or the tip, that some of the hedge funds were going to be doing this with GameStop. I almost want to say stonk instinctively now, but GameStop stock. God, they were going to be doing it with that. And that was the point where there were several people on Reddit, and it was that, you know, kind of pebble that started the avalanche that said, no, you're not going to do this to my company, my childhood. You know, for better or for worse, when it comes to GameStop, I've certainly had my fair share of criticism about them in the past. They've done a lot of weird shit, you know, over the years. But I can also recognize, you know, they have really been kind of stepping on it in the past year to really try to turn shit around. Hence the Reggie Fils-Aimé on the board story we had not that long ago. And then we had this guy from Chewy, right? He was like the CEO or something. I'm sorry, I might be misstating positions. That was the big story. He put his own money into it. And that was the thing that Reddit kind of tailgated with, right?
So right. Why they're have legitimate reasons why they believe in the stock. It's not just, ooh, it's because it's overshorted and they don't really like the company. It's that they legitimately think that, you know, it's a decent stock and that it's undervalued. And so that's why they were investing in it. And a lot of these folks, you know, like, for example, the guy that kind of led the charge, I guess, who goes by the username Deep Fucking Value, he actually invested back in 2019. He's actually been talking about it for, you know, a while now. So this isn't like a brand new thing.
The best story I've seen on this whole thing, the best, is that there was this kid like 7 or 8 years old, maybe 10. Sorry, I don't remember the age. But I remember reading he got as a Kwanzaa gift, his aunt bought him 10 shares of GameStop stock like a year or two ago when he graduated elementary school or something. I don't know, some type of, like, you know, and it was a cute thing. Like, cause, you know, cause GameStop stock back then was like $5-6, right? My grandma always got me a savings bond every Christmas, every birthday, right? That was her little, like, I'm going to teach you about investment. But for this family, the aunt or whoever it was, I'm sorry, I don't have the article in front of me, bought 10 shares of GameStop stock, which at the time was not worth that much. It was $6 a share, maybe. So the kid gets, like, and the kid gets informational pamphlets about GameStop and all this stuff. And now it was just in the news when GameStop hit like $350 this week or whatever it was. They were like, okay, maybe, you know, they let the kid decide, but the kid decided to sell. And, you know, that's great news. You love to see a 10-year-old make, you know, $3,000 and learn about the stock market in the process. And I thought the really cool thing was they took $2,000 to do something about, like, paying for school and stuff like that. But they're going to take the other $1,000 and reinvest as a family. And I thought that was a neat little, like, family learns how to play the stock market type of story. It was just really touching, I think.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of these, like, kind of different people investing in it as well. And taking the money that they've made from that and, you know, paying for consoles for hospitals and buying stuff for first responders and stuff like that. So, you know, and stories of people being able to raise enough money to pay for surgeries and, you know, healthcare, whatever the case may be, paying off their student loans, buying a house, you know, just, you know, stuff that is like night and day for them. It's changed their life. So it's pretty incredible. This isn't the only stock, too. The AMC was another one that they've been doing it with. BlackBerry on, I don't remember the other one.
Nokia was another one, I think.
Yeah, Nokia. So there's been several that they've been doing this with. And it's just, it's kind of ironic, though, that you see these billionaires now, you know, complaining, oh, you guys are manipulating the market. It's like they were doing the same thing. There's like some old video clips online of, was it the guy that's behind that show Mad Money or whatever, talking about how he used to be with a hedge fund and how they manipulated stock prices and stuff by like literally passing off fake news to like different outlets and stuff to get people scared and stuff.
Can we talk about that? Because this is where the chat is going, because another thing that really pushed this GameStop stock thing, that really kind of pushed it forward, was, you know, whether you love the guy or hate the guy, Elon Musk tweeted about it. And he's got a lot of followers. He has a lot of influence, especially when it comes to finances. And he's tweeted about this multiple times. And he tweeted about the Dogecoin thing, which is a whole other – that really is outside of gaming news. But it's kind of like that whole Dogecoin thing, the most I'll say about that is that it is showing that this GameStop thing is not the end of it. This is going to be something that continues. How long it continues, I don't know. But anyway, my point is – and the reason why Elon Musk, assumably, maybe gets involved in this whole thing, what does he give a shit about GameStop, about all this, besides maybe that he's invested his own money? Ah, but do you know another very popular company with the short sellers that they love to short sell the stock with? It's Tesla. So I'm sure Elon Musk is looking at these guys going, fuck those guys, because they fuck with me. And then we saw, and in chat, they're talking about, you know, Bobby.
There's.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying that this is a big, you know, show that basically this is all being manipulated behind closed doors, and people shouldn't, you know, going back to another statement that the stock market is not indicative of the economy, really.
Right. And it makes you think, going back to the whole like fake story thing, you know, how hard has they've tried to push that narrative about the Tesla autopilot is like a murderous rampage car out of hell type of thing going on, you know? I mean, sure, it sounds like there's, you know, some issues, but I don't – it's one of those things where it seems like this – you know, and again –
it's Christine.
Where, you know, Bobby has actually shown the opposite to be true with his video over the Vogue Network YouTube – no, I think it might be on his personal YouTube, but whatever. That actually, wherever it is, it actually shows, like, how autopilot actually saved him in an accident, you know. So my point is, it makes you stop and think. All of these stories about the narrative behind companies about Tesla, and here's how this is gaming news, folks, are the negative stories behind GameStop fake? That's what this is all leading to. Now, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, and y'all have set foot in a GameStop. I wouldn't say it's all fake, but how much of it has maybe been blown up a little bit? It makes you wonder.
Well, the other thing too, you have folks that are still like, they're absolutely pissed about, you know, the last economic crisis they were in from 2008, where the stock market crashed, and, you know, how the government bailed out these, you know, banks and everything, and how literally you had the people, you know, on Wall Street, these hedge fund folks, you know, celebrating with champagne while the Occupy Wall Street folks were down below, you know, protesting everything. So now a lot of these people, it's like, this is personal. I'm buying the stock. I don't care if it goes to zero. If it means that these hedge funds are going to lose millions of dollars, it's worth the price of admission. So a lot of these folks are just, you know, investing because of that. They're like, I don't care if I lose, you know, what it, really to them. I mean, the amount that they're investing, there's a finite amount that you can lose there. It's, you know, whatever you invested in. Whereas the shorts, there is no cap for that. They can keep going. So the longer they hold on to it, the more that they lose, and the higher it goes.
Yeah. Anything you want to add to this, Jamie? From what you're watching and seeing?
Not really. I mean, I'm still in kind of this wait and see mode right now, you know, just because it is, I mean, we've been talking about this for 2 weeks, but it's still in early stages, I think. I think that there's going to be a lot that comes out of the woodwork. And I know a lot of, you know, the news that we consume is manipulated. I mean, I always tell people that if you're going to look at one news source, look at five others, including one that is an opposing source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I tell my mother, you know, okay, link me all this red news stuff, but I want you to also go and read all this other stuff, too. You know, you have to be able to see the big picture and don't necessarily look to American news sources. Just saying.
Go ahead.
Well, just that the biggest thing about it is that go into this with your eyes open. Don't expect all of the truth to come out. They're going to try, you know, if things go really sour on this, they're going to try to sweep it under. It's just another sign that the stock market is inherently a corrupt establishment.
I wanted to read some of these comments about the Tesla thing that Bobby is saying in our chat, because it is very interesting about, you know, how much is the news, you know, altered, perhaps. Bobby he's saying a lot in chat. I'm just going to read some of the comments. The video I made on YouTube actually got a lot of press with the shorts, mostly calling me a dumbass fanboy. There were rebuttals on auto websites and calls for me to have my driver's license revoked. It was wild. And so because Bobby was trying to say something good, but it also shows that just like that hyperactivity of the internet in general, when it comes to everything, when it comes to politics, when it comes to gaming, fuck, look at the replies to any Xbox or Sony post. The first couple replies are always like, fuck Xbox, Sony's better, or fuck Sony, Microsoft's better. And like, shut up. Like, I can't believe I'm saying this, because this is the show where every gamer has a voice. But like, gamers of a certain maturity level, I think I'm getting to the point where it's like, I am not interested in hearing from these people on Twitter, because I don't think they're actually gamers. But that's a whole nother, I guess, debate. You know,
still think that we have an unspoken caveat with every gamer. I'd say there's definitely, we don't have room for hateful voices here.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There is a little bit of a caveat there, and there always has been. And if you don't like it, tough.
Yeah. My ass. Don't, you might have rabies.
Bobby continues, they're too busy bitching about games. They have no time left to play games. Fifth Dream says, we're non-toxic gamers have a voice. Yes.
Agreed.
There's that. Questbuster says, I'm only surprised that what happened with GameStop didn't happen sooner. That is interesting that it kind of like took this long. And I don't know if it's something about the pandemic or if it's just something about, you know, again, people's childhood and GameStop in particular or what it is. But I guess it was just this perfect storm that allowed this to happen. Now, I'm going to admit, and maybe I shouldn't talk about this on OLR, but I will. I didn't get into the whole GameStop thing because I kind of felt like it's probably too late. Like, that's just my own personal opinion. Like,
it's,
I kind of feel
too
like
late.
If I went, did you invest in the GameStop thing, Loki?
Not yet. Monday I will, though, because my account, like, it takes a long time for everything. I was able to get in on AMC because you can do that through Cash App, actually. So you can open an account through Cash App, transfer stuff almost immediately, and you can buy certain stocks. They don't have GameStop on there, which is unfortunate. No. But I did AMC, and I'm up a little bit there. I plan on getting in on Doge as well on Monday, just for the hell of it.
Because, like a Dogecoin somewhere.
Because somewhere. If you think about, like, I mean, really, I should have done it a long time ago. But like, I mean, really, it's like back when it was like a fraction of a penny. It's like it can really only go up. I mean, it's just, it is very volatile. It's going up and down. But you just buy, sell. I mean, I don't know. This is more interesting for me, like, considering that, like, when the lottery was up to $1 billion. Like, I can remember how many lottery tickets I bought each week that came out. I'm like, damn, I could just put that money into the stock market. At least that's a little bit more, you know.
That's it. And
by
the
potential to get stuff.
You have chatters that are advising you against the Doge thing, but, you know, make your own decision. But I didn't really finish my thought, but I will say, I did not get into the stock thing. I bought my first cryptocurrency this week, and it was not Doge. It was a different one. But I made my own, I kind of did my own research and made my own decision. I didn't spend a lot, but it's exactly Loki's reasoning right there.
I know that the value tanked right now. It's because they're blocking people from buying it right now. The apps that used to, like Robinhood, another app that you can buy Doge in, they block people from buying Doge right now. And a lot of I know AMC's down a little bit as well. But once again, I don't invest money that I don't expect to lose. If we lose it, we lose it. You know,
yeah, that was
but
my thing.
That's the point.
I put in $50, which would have been my Reno gambling money in a normal world. You know,
I'm not putting in a ton of money. I know better than that. I'm just saying, it's money that like it's not going to make a. It's no big deal if I lose it.
Yeah, and Bobby in chat.
I don't gamble.
Bobby in chat says, yeah, I'm considering learning about the stock market in the same way I go to a casino. I set aside money and I say, I will never see this money again and use that. And Questbuster says, Loki is investing right. Don't invest in anything that you can't afford to lose. And so, Jamie, you're saying, I don't want to lose anything, so I'm just not playing this game. And that's fine,
too. I know that mine is invested in a very stable business that is not losing money in most of its markets. That has split several times in the last few years, and the value has, of course, gone up incredibly. So,
yeah,
I'm pretty happy. And for the record, I do all of my buying and selling through E-Trade. So,
yeah, and I have
happy with them.
I've used one of those micro investing apps. I'm not going to give them a free ad, but basically it's one of those apps where you put a little bit of money into it, and it's a little bit more of a traditional like stock portfolio type of thing. But again, that's money that would have been extra Starbucks trips during the workday that I'm not doing right now. So there's that. And I have a 401k and I've had one for a while. So
like Bobby was saying, there's companies that also pay dividends, which mine is set up that way. And my dividends get reinvested into the same stock. I mean, I could put it in something else if I wanted to, or I could cash that out if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, you know, having that money there from my payouts has been, it saved our tail a couple of times, you know, when we needed that money and we made sure that we, you know, and the thing is that the company, as I said before, it's the company I work at, which no one gets to know. But because it's so stable and performing so well, I can basically say, okay, I need $3,000 for this. And I can go in there and get that $3,000 and it will have refilled itself in 3 to 6 months. Hmm. So, or replaced itself.
Well, I mean, I will say this too about all this story and everything is that I think, you know, through this whole experience, and I think video games are to credit in part for this. Yes, we all learned about the stock market and economics in high school, but how much did we really get practical knowledge and use it until the year we were all stuck at home and had to play Animal Crossing because there was nothing else to do? And which, honestly, it hasn't ended. I mean, I realize some parts of the country people think it has, but it hasn't. It's the lights at the end of the tunnel. We're not there yet. But I almost wonder how much of that kind of enabled some of this. And now with this all over and this getting memeified all over Twitter, all over Facebook, all over social media, I really think we're moving towards something where you're going to see more common people that are investing in the stock market through these, you know, apps and things that let you kind of cherry pick what you want to do. I think video games are a big part of that. I think they really are. So.
Yeah, so when I was in my economics class, we had to do that stock market thing, create a portfolio. So I spent all my money on penny stocks, and then they doubled in price, and I made a ton of money. So I'm doing the same thing.
You know what we did?
Good luck. What'd you do?
We invested in Intel in 94 and a funeral home. And I'll tell you why. And people, you know, because keep in mind, this is Jamie the goth and the funeral home was my idea. Mm-hmm. It was like a company of funeral homes, like I don't want to say like a franchise, but kind of. I was like, look, people die every day. They're always going to have business. I've never seen a funeral home, at least any type of related chain of funeral home, ever go out of business.
I don't want to be disgusting, but you can't help but notice, especially with this past year and everything that's happened, like if you owned a lot of those stocks, you're probably doing pretty well. Like it's
or if you were in the government and bought in on like, was it? I think there were some of the PPE and body bags and stuff like that. They were investing in that because they knew that the numbers were going to go up.
I mean, it's gross. I'm sorry, but that's the reality. Anyway, sorry, Jamie.
I always half wondered if the tyrant had investments in that, and that's why we never had a lot of our any good legislation on it. But that was a little conspiracy of mine.
If only we could actually investigate those types of things. But anyhow, we won't go there. anyway.
I'm looking forward to the 8th, and I'll leave it at that.
So anything else we want to say about the stonks and all that? And that goes for you guys in chat as well. Yeah, Bobby's saying, I should have invested in Zoom a year ago. I don't think they had their IPO yet at that time. But certainly comparable companies, WebEx, you know, and Cisco.
One thing I need to repeat what Bobby said, because this is very important, is that we are not financial advisors. We don't do any of that. You know, that's not what we do. We're not giving legal advice. We're not giving financial advice. So do what you will with what we say. This is our opinion on the matter.
Yeah.
You know, so again, do what you will with what we've shared with you, with our experiences on it, but certainly educate yourself completely before you dive into something like this. Just don't do it on a whim.
Yeah. It's sad that we need that disclaimer, but I understand why completely. So I would hope all that's obvious. Yes, of course, we are not financial advisors. We're just schmoes in our basement, but so are all the people that are starting a Wall Street revolution right now. So congrats.
Let's just be honest. Like, like the whole reason I played lottery, because I know it's like an insanely no way you're going to win any of that stuff. But like, I'm just like at that point right now with my job and everything. Like, I just don't want to do it anymore. Yeah. I just don't want to do work anymore.
My mom always said it costs a dollar to dream. So go get the lotto ticket.
And so like at this point, like I just want to have an active, like just something that I'm doing to try to make things better. Like I get it. Like, yeah, you could lose some money on stuff, but if you just be careful with what you're doing and you don't try to, you know, overextend yourself, then maybe you can make some small gains here and there and stuff. And maybe you do get lucky with some of this stuff. It's ironic because I actually thought about investing in GameStop a while back because I was like, well, maybe I should throw some money in the stock market because my 401k portfolio is not doing that, you know, hot. You know, why not? And their stock's pretty cheap. So should have done that. But oh, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, hindsight. Yeah, exactly. All right, let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk about other things that we escape to when we don't want to work anymore, and that is video games. So let's talk a little bit about our gaming weeks. So, Dark Soccer, I'll start with you. How was your gaming week?
Well, lots of Animal Crossing, duh.
Of course.
I also got Cyber Shadow, which is sort of like a Revenge of the Ninja by the same folks that did Shovel Knight.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely has that same kind of feel to it, but it's definitely a little bit of a pissy game. You know, there's some cheap kills in there, but your save points are pretty well spread apart. The fights for the bosses are fairly interesting. It's got some, very cool mechanics and some bonuses in there. The story is pretty okay so far. Dan, of course, has been playing it a lot more than I have. So it's sort of like if I start playing a game and then I sit down and watch Dan play it, it's like, oh, I don't want to play anymore, you know? But it's a really good game, absolutely worth checking out. I think it's $20 on Switch right now on a electronic download. And so this has pretty much been it. I'm still playing Wordscapes, you know, it's just a good waste of time. So about it. I'm actually been going back and looking at Saturn games. There's this thing that's kind of like an EverDrive for Saturn, where you, I think you switch it out in part for the graphic card port on the back of it. And then you load ROMs on it like you would an EverDrive. I have to look it up again. It's like $200. But I'm kind of thinking about it because we have a lot of Saturn games, and of course I don't want anything to happen to them. But it also means that I can play translated versions of games that I own that I've never finished because my reading comprehension level in Japanese was not great. Hmm. So if I find the name of it again, I'll link it in chat, but we've been watching a lot of like Saturn reviews and things like that. So that's really where it's stuck into my head. Just throwing that out there. It's not really what I'm playing, but what I have in mind to play.
All right. Well,
And I did play Pirates of the Caribbean Pinball. So I did play some pinball.
Did you get one of those in your house?
Yeah, one of the Jersey Jack ones.
Oh, nice.
It's in Dan's office.
Wow. How many machines do you have in your house right now?
In the house? Physically in the house, 4. And then another 6 or 7 in the garage. I think we still own like 15.
I consider that part of the house. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm just trying to think about it legitimately. Like my World Cup is off at Dan's friend's to be shopped. We just got back Shadow. So yeah, Dan put that in the hallway, which, you know, completely annoys me, but whatever. Yeah, we've loaned out a few, and we have a few, and there's some that I really wish I could get rid of because I don't like them and I want money. Actually, the thing is that I'm really ready to like get rid of about 4 tables and move the ones that are in the house outside. Like maybe keep Theater of Magic in the house, but that's about it. Theater and World Cup should stay in the house forever because they're my babies.
You know, would it be fair to say, I mean, I know you kind of said that you don't do a lot with stock or cryptocurrency outside of your one preferred stock, but would it be fair to say that maybe where you do invest money is pinball tables? I mean, because you kind of take them in, make them better, trade them, flip them, whatever. I mean, it's kind of what you're doing a little bit.
Yeah, it's not really necessarily.
But it's for hobby, for fun, not for money, I guess.
It's like the restoration business, you know, and the values of things go up and down. That's really just going to be not stock, not really like stocks, but just more of knowing your market. We, you know, try to have the best thing that's out on the market. I guess it's very rudimentary capitalism where you take your product or in some cases, you know, the components of a product, put it together into your product and then you sell it. Or, you know, people who flip houses, this is the same thing. Buy them cheap, fix them cheap, sell them high. Car flipping. There's people who do that. My one of my exes used to do that with 70s Oldsmobiles.
Yep.
Now, if he can find me a 1970 422, then I'm down for that. But but the thing is that with our network for pinball is that we do have the ability to say, I don't have this, but I know who does. And we kind of scratch each other's backs in the community. Mm. I mean, there are some really cutthroat people, but for the most part, it's more of a community level thing. You know, if we've put in work to it, but a good buddy is like, hey, you know, I've really been looking for Doctor Who, and I see yours is in really great shape. I know you just shopped it. We can say, well, you're a good guy and there's a chance we'll get it back from you. So we'll sell it to you for what we paid for it plus the repairs, you know, and not make a profit on it. But we know we have a chance of playing that again because it's at someone's house. So it's really more like community oriented. It's not quite the same, but it's similar enough to, Dan wouldn't let me sell my Doctor Who. Sorry, Bobby.
Sia Tiberian chat says Jamie flipping tables, kind of literally. I mean, in a way. Look, one day I will have my baby Pac-Man table one day, but steps
and Bobby,
small steps.
One day, if we are going to sell that table, I am going to insist that it be to you.
Okay. All right, we got to move on though. We could do a whole podcast on pinball table maintenance. I'm kind of surprised Jamie doesn't have one, but maybe someday. But for now, let's move on with other.
Not good at that. Dan does that shit for me.
All right. Then you do the production. You get him to be the expert, and you're the host. All right. Anyway,
I'll tell you, Jack Danger does that already better than I do. So
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. No. Deadflip. If. I'm going to go ahead and give some kudos to Deadflip Podcast and his live stream. You want to watch some good pinball, check out Deadflip.
All right. They didn't even pay for that spot. All right. Loki.
He's a good guy. He helped me decide on Dan's Christmas present.
That's fair. Loki, how was your game week?
So I didn't play a whole ton because I've been working on my game. So I did play a lot of mobile stuff. So I've been switching between like Pokemon Go and Minecraft Earth and Orna. Just depending on where I'm at, usually because I run out of things to do in one of those, and so I switched to the other one. So I've been doing that, and then I picked up an original NES this week, so that should be coming pretty soon. So I can test, you know, the games I actually burn with my, ROM burner. So you know, getting prepared for the physical copies of Pixel Poops number 2. And yeah, and also we're set to launch on the 10th of February. So just working towards that, just trying to get everything done.
Wait, we're set to launch on the 10th of February, meaning your NES ROM or like your game
is
done?
Yeah, so like Pixel Poops 2, the Pixel Poops on Steam, and the Pixel Poops 64 should all be February 10th.
Oh, I didn't know you were all aiming for the same day. Okay, wow.
Yeah. So we're all aiming for the same day.
That's amazing. Well, good luck. All right.
A couple more weeks.
Yeah. I've been playing the beta, thanks to YYR, giving those codes in our Discord at vognetwork.com/Discord. It's fun. It has a lot. I mean, for as silly as the name is and the concept and everything, there is something. It really has like that Atari 2600, like very simple game, but can get very difficult very fast type of charm to it. Like, I didn't even realize that he kind of built something into it where, like, once you get a certain score, it gets a lot harder because there'll be some different types of walking. I don't want to ruin it all, but it really invokes a lot of what made those old Atari 2600 games fun. So check it out when it hits Steam, or get on our Discord and get the peekaboo a little bit early. All right. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I didn't get a code because I'm going to buy it instead. I think it's actually going to be free to play. I'll still throw money at the DLC, or I'll gift it to somebody. That's what I did with the last game that he gave me a code for. I bought it for somebody else that I thought would like it. So, all right. Let's see. Other stuff for my gaming week. Honestly, I've had kind of a slower week when it comes to games as well. I've been playing a little bit of Pokemon, meaning Shield continuing with the DLC, but also Pokemon Go quite a bit. I've done all 4 weeks of the collection challenge in Pokemon Go, so I've been doing that, and that's fun. Otherwise, as far as other games, I've been playing Final Fantasy XIV a lot. That's pretty much been most of the bulk of my gaming time, continuing the online adventures there. There's a tiny patch coming on Tuesday that's going to allow the Blue Mage job to go up to 70, so that's really exciting. And then they're going to do something called the Relic Weapon, which is like the a really fancy, you know, weapon you have to work really hard to get. They're kind of putting another step into that for another upgrade, so that should be fun as well. And then there are big announcements for Final Fantasy XIV on Friday. They're actually doing a big stream where they're going to assumably unveil the next expansion, because we were supposed to have Fan Fest in San Diego this year in October, but obviously thanks to Miss Rona, we didn't have that anything. So this is kind of like the assumed makeup for some of that. So we're getting that on Friday. I really wanted to co-stream it with some of my Final Fantasy buddies, but we don't know if legally Square is allowing that. So unfortunately, we're erring on the side of we'll just watch ourselves, and I'll be here to comment on it on Sunday. But if I find out that they allow co-streams of it, then stay tuned to our Twitter, either over at twitter.com/OLR for the show, or twitter.com/VogNetwork for the network, for any updates and last minute things that are plotted if I find out that Square does indeed allow the co-streaming of that sort of thing. And if anybody happens to know that in our chat, let me know, because I'd be very thankful to know that information. All right. But that's really it for my gaming week otherwise. So let's get into some news, and we'll go to Loki for our first story tonight.
Yeah, let's talk about Amazon Game Studios. I haven't really heard too much about them. And apparently the reason why is because they're having some issues. So according to a report by Bloomberg, there's been some serious stuff going on behind the scenes at Amazon Game Studios. So right now, they had conducted about 30 interviews with former Amazon employees and talked about some of the stuff going on behind the scenes. So for example, they said the game that they're working on, New World, which apparently you play as a colonist in the fictionalized 17th century America. They said the enemy designs bore an uncomfortable similarity to Native Americans. And after they had hired a tribal consultant, they found that indeed it was offensive, so that pushed back the release from August of 2020 to now sometime in the spring. Also, you had, you know, of course, this like bro culture that's going on, which we've heard a lot in different companies, but apparently that's still something that they're dealing with there as well. And apparently following a disagreement with a male employee of senior leadership, one of the women that was interviewed, he made up some new position above her and hired men into those roles. Apparently the leader of the entire games division has never made a video game before. And he's basically frustrated developers with basic takes and had, they said, troubling differentiating between gameplay and concept footage. They were forcing everybody into that proprietary lumberyard program that they had to develop games in. So their game engine. And apparently that was a little bit difficult as well. But now that they have this new guy on board from Take-Two, he's kind of eased that mandate, but that did cause some issues as well. So it's just been kind of not smooth. So yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see what they come out with, but like right now, I mean, to me, it's almost like Stadia, where they have like these Stadia developed games, but like, where are these? I mean, we haven't really seen anything from them.
Yeah, Fifth Dream in chat says, sounds like a winner all around, and by that I mean close Amazon Games and give up. Questbuster says, they hired some top-shelf names to work on their products, too, and most, if not all of them, left. And then, let's see, this is a newer chatter, so welcome. Dragon Samur...
Samael.
Samael. It's blue on black on my screen, so I can't even read it. But thank you, Jamie. Samael.
You're welcome.
Says, that Lumberyard engine is a disaster, too. It was CryEngine, but then all torn apart. It's such a shame. So
indeed.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues going on with the Amazon thing, and it almost makes you wonder if they're ever going to get a game out. I mean, yes, I know New World is like, but like legit actually like have a game out. It's doesn't seem too promising over there.
I didn't have high expectations.
Yeah. So, womp womp. All right. Well, another game. I don't think people necessarily had high expectations for this game, but it's interesting to hear that it's doing well enough. And that is the game The Medium. This seems like a game. I want to check this game out because I guess it's supposed to be like a psychological game, but not gross. Like it kind of invokes Silent Hill. And I mean, so far as the fact that Akira Yamaoka does some of the music in it and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn apparently sings some songs in it. So, I mean, talk about a throwback to Silent Hill. But it's a game. But I'm told do not expect it to be Silent Hill or you will be disappointed. So I want to make sure that is appropriately communicated as well. But it is a game called The Medium. And The Medium came out on PC and Xbox, and apparently via an interview with Money.pl, which is a Polish website regarding, of course, money, the studio who developed The Medium has said it has already made back its money for development and marketing costs. So anything from here on out is pure profit. It's interesting to note that The Medium is a day one Xbox Game Pass game, and this is how a lot of people are discovering it. And I know that's one reason why it's kind of on my radar right now as well, is it's like, oh, it's a psychological kind of thriller game, and I don't have to pay extra money for it on top of what I'm already paying for Game Pass. So it's interesting to hear that that is already successful. Some folks are kind of taking that a step further to be like, this is an example of how Game Pass is successful for a lot of games right now. And so this being more of a fringe title, not sure that people would have dropped $60 to experiment on this game and figure it out. But with Game Pass, you got a lot more that are willing to take the risk. So it's very interesting to hear that it's been successful. Breaking even the first week, it sounds pretty successful to me that it's all going to be profit from here on out, especially if they end up releasing a version on Switch. I don't know if that's technically possible, but releasing a version on PlayStation later and who knows what. So, by the way, if you weren't already aware, Xbox Game Pass has 15 million subscribers. So, pretty neat. Those of you that are listening live, have any of you out there checked out The Medium? So, Dragon Samae says, Medium screams Silent Hill and free on Game Pass. Game Pass is nailing it so much right now, other than the Xbox Gold price increase that Xbox retracted. Yeah, we talked about that a little bit on last week's show. That was not a great look, but at the end of the day, at least they've retracted, even if they maybe showed their ass a little bit. I think Game Pass is still the place to be, at least for now. We will see what develops over the next, are they going to do price increase on Game Pass? I suppose it's inevitable, but I don't think they can really get away with it until they've got their Halo and they've got more of those Series X, I don't want to say exclusive because I know that's not their plan, but Series X, like, focused, I guess, games would really, I think, help sell that a little bit. Pod Culture says Medium is a rare game that is well done. I see what you did there. I like that. As Joan Hunter Matt says, it's on my list of things to try next. I just signed up for Game Pass. So, yeah, I want to check that out as well. I was listening to Bobby because he's on before us, of course, here at Vogue Network. And he was talking about a patent that that game has where I guess apparently you actually control a character in kind of two places at once. Like there's a normal realm and a spirit realm type of thing that you're kind of controlling the character. It sounds like a neat mechanic. So I want to check that out. So pretty cool. All right, let's move on. Dark Sakura, something that's been getting a lot of buzz this week, right?
So, yeah, Konami did some basic restructuring by dissolving. Well, it's announced that it planned to dissolve three production divisions to adapt to the market. And they put this out on the Konami's corporate website. But this made people think that they were going to be shutting down their video game division. And they say this is not the case. They are very insistent on it. The quote states, the announcement made refers to an internal restructure with production divisions being consolidated. We have not, quote, shut down our video gaming division. So we'll see. I mean, Konami hasn't really been putting out a whole lot in the way of games. I mean, just like Metal Gear and some reissues of earlier games. The only game I think right now in production is PES 2022. And there's rumors of a Silent Hill game, but we don't know.
I wouldn't hedge a lot of money on that. I'd be very surprised. I think if the Konami, you know, digital thing, you know, for the games division is still around, hopefully, and I really think this is best case scenario, they're licensing out a lot of their IPs to other companies. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. And I think we also know that in Japan, they're still doing, you know, because this game is rooted in like Bomani stuff and some of those more like evergreen always services online in Japan that they've been doing. You know, there's a Beatmania 2DX online, Infinitas, whatever is a thing. And they've got, I think Sound Voltex has one.
Pop Music
has one. I think a lot of those games kind of have one. So I think that's something they're still invested in as well. So I wouldn't look to other companies to develop music games, unfortunately. But I think some of these other ones, wouldn't you love it if they would let somebody else work on a Castlevania or a Silent Hill? I don't know.
Well, they had a good shot at a good Silent Hill game and then
true.
Kojima.
Yes.
I can't make words happen. It's fine. They fucked Kojima over.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't hold your breath on anything that exciting coming. Maybe some more like retro types of collections, but I don't know.
As they've been doing already. So, like I said, I don't see anything particularly new for their console market.
And retro can only take you so far. Plus, you have to remember a lot. Like, let's say they let another developer make a new Castlevania. Oh, here's a game that I played this week. Because I played it on Sunday after OLR, so I forgot about it during my gaming week. But Bloodstained Ritual of the Night has that classic mode that I checked out. Mm-hmm. And boy, oh boy, is it just Castlevania.
That's exactly what it's for.
It's not even shy about it. It's just... Like, I'm not even talking about I'm talking about the classic mode is like old school Castlevania, like Vampire Hunter, like that old school, you know, original game. And it's fun. It's great. It's well done. But it also really makes you realize like, okay, even if Konami suddenly did another Castlevania game, Igarashi has clearly moved on and is doing his own thing. So the Castlevania you're going to get, it's going to be different. Now, different can go both ways. I don't think different actually automatically has to be a negative. Unfortunately, you look at Konami and you look at some of their choices, like the Contra game that came out recently, which honestly, I guess Dark Tetsuya was a fan, but a lot of people I've kind of seen online are like that was Contra full of choices. And so, you know, it didn't end up so well. But if they let somebody else do a Castlevania, you know, the right company might actually be able to do it very well. Somebody like, the people that have been doing the Blaster Master reboots. Have been knocking it out of the park. So why not let them do it? Is that Way Forward or who's actually developing that? But they're knocking it out of the park, honestly. So, all right. going to our chat over at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork. Kate Catastrophe asks, which company is worse, Konami or EA? Both for different reasons. That's a very hard question. They both have done some, I mean, it's hard. I think it's, or I should say it's easy for me to want to say Konami, because I don't really care about the sports games, so whatever. I mean, there is Mass Effect, so I guess I have that involved with EA. But with Konami, you look at how they've tripped over themselves time and time again, and this show is really rooted in, like, music games, Bamani and all that. That's, you know, where our name came from and what we talked about for the first couple of years of the show and so on was really that culture. So to see, like, that whole thing, Konami is really, I mean, I know DDR is still around, kind of, and I know it still has a loyal following. I know there's other podcasts that are now doing what we did the first 2 years of our show, where they're talking about, like, DDR culture and music and culture and stuff, which is great. More props to them. But I just feel like it could have been so much more. It could have been so much more. And I think Guitar Hero and Rock Band and that whole, you know, thing that kind of came and went, I think shows that Konami could have done more than just, like, Rock Revolution, which was their answer to all that at the same time.
That was awful.
Yeah, but that was their solution to how are we going to go up against Guitar Hero and Rock Band.
And so it was a terrible idea.
It was a terrible idea.
And then after that, they had Beaten Groovy. So, I mean, like,
choices.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Loki.
Yeah, so Valve is facing a lawsuit over apparently issues with the Steam controller, and that its design actually was patented by somebody else. So this is regarding a third-party controller maker, SCUF, that says back in 2014 that the design for the Steam controller was infringing on the Ironberg patents. But they went ahead with the design anyways. And apparently the patent is regarding the rear side triggers. They said that's, which is on, I guess, opposite side of the pads. So what I'm guessing is it's not like your normal trigger buttons, but like those under controller triggers that you have on some of these, you know, fancier buttons. I think they have, like, on the Pro controller and stuff like that from the Xbox Pro controller or whatever. But yeah, so apparently they're filing a lawsuit regarding that. I don't know. The controller sucks, so whatever. But it's kind of a little late for that. They've already discontinued the controller, and I don't think that they made much money off of that. It's going to be hard to argue losses on that, but we'll see what happens. Settlement, I'm guessing.
Did you hear about the other lawsuit involving Valve about, was it, no, we had the geo-blocking a couple weeks ago, but there was another one about their contract clause about that you have to, if you put your game up for sale on Steam, which I think the lawsuit, I think, was trying to claim that Steam kind of has a sense of a monopoly on the market when it comes to PC, that it has to be lowest price on Steam. Even if so, you can't put it like lower price on Humble, or if it goes on sale somewhere else, you have to put it on sale on Steam too, which I kind of thought, and again, I don't have the story in front of me, maybe some of you in chat recall this a little better than I do, but I seem to think, like, doesn't Amazon have a controversial thing like this too when it comes to their store, at least when it comes to mobile apps, I know was a thing.
Yeah, I don't,
because that was a very controversial
thing.
Sounds
vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but yeah, I could see them kind of doing something like that, or and not even necessarily just, you know, Valve, but like I think, you know, a lot of different mobile storefronts and stuff possibly have similar types of requirements.
Yeah.
You know, just for fair competition, they'll allege.
Now, Questbuster wants to point out in our chat over twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, when it comes to the controller lawsuit, it does not appear to be patent trolls that are doing this. It's saying, not patent troll that is suing. They actually make specialty controllers. They're part of the company that make the SCUF controllers that go for nearly $200 on Amazon. So it seems like, you know, unfortunately, we hear a lot about patent trolls, but this may be somebody that actually does have an interest in this, yet, again, kind of like Loki was saying, these controllers have kind of come and gone anyway. So it's interesting. That's happening
now.
Yeah,
these interesting looking controllers there.
Yeah.
I like the fancy designs that they have for them.
Yeah.
Those analog sticks look pretty nice.
That's why they're $200, right?
I've used some. Well, I want to say I've used something similar to this. Like, they actually had, and I don't remember this is the same company, but I remember those types of little triggers that they had. But they had a long time ago, it was this thing you can like strap onto your Xbox controller. Cause I actually had one that I got as like a promo thing or something. And it was weird. Like, you could basically just strap it on. It looks like this giant spider thing on top of your controller that adds like all these different buttons and stuff that you basically just pull and push different buttons on the actual controller, but they put them in different places. It was really weird, but yeah, it kind of looks like that. But I guess now they've refined it quite more than with that, you know, spider thing that was on there.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. A few more stories for you guys before we get to the classic game of the week. And first, let's talk about this, because this is a story about a mod that came out recently, and it's gone through a lot. So this is a mod for Fallout New Vegas that was really going to be transformative of the entire game. Fallout the Frontier is the name of this mod, and it did release on January 15th, and it was so popular when it first came out, because again, this has been something that's been in development for a long time, and a lot of people were involved with this. Doing fan art and, all this stuff. So, anyhow, the mod came out. It crashed Nexus Mods because it got 82,000 downloads the day it came out. And then, a lot of stuff started coming out about it. In kind of most notably, I should say, there was, one of the mod developers got ejected from the team because of some pedophilic content that they had been posting.
Ew.
Yeah, exactly. Big ew, right? And then a few hours after that, the entire mod was taken offline. So, yeah, big ew. And, you know, that is gross and all that stuff. But as I mentioned earlier, there's all these people involved with a mod, right? And so this person just basically sank the entire ship, right? Now, I'm hearing a lot. I haven't played the mod myself. I'm hearing a lot of it is there's some kind of strange content in there, and I'm going to leave it at that. Some of it makes sense in the Fallout universe. Some of it, like, the sex with the Deathclaw doesn't necessarily make sense. You know what? People do nude mods for games. So if people want to have sex with the Deathclaw, okay, whatever, I guess. It also should be pointed out that the Discord for this ended up getting raided by 4chan, which certainly didn't help. And now you've got all these people that were involved with the project that are getting doxxed and all this other stuff. And it's just, no money was to be made off this whole thing. So I don't know what point they're going to make with that whole thing. I mean, yes, go after the guy that did the pedophilia, but I don't know. But again, I haven't played the mod myself, so I can't say much more than that. Looking at chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork, SSG100 Matt says, Macho Man Deathclaws, though. Oh, yeah, so maybe they were just waiting for the mod to the mod that would turn the Deathclaws into something else. I see. That was just forward thinking is what that was. I see. Questbuster says they can party with the Macho Man Dragons in Skyrim. Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Anyway, Thoughts to those that, you know, maybe got involved with the project that didn't know the type of people that were on the team. That's unfortunate. All right. Moving on, though. Let's go to our next story. Dark Soccer, I think it's yours.
All right. Well, I love Sega, as has been proved with a chart recently. Thanks, Rob, for letting me know about that. But anyway, Sega is going through a split with its amusement and video game divisions. It is definitely leading to some rumors that Sega may be in pre-acquisition mode, I guess. So basically, those two divisions are basically being split again, like I said. The CCO, Toshihiro Nagoshi, is going to be creative director effective on April 1st. That ain't no joke, y'all. But they will remain under the ownership of Sega Sammy. And the quote is that it's intended to accelerate global business development by streamlining their structure and accelerate decision making. So they, the other mention on this is that it's intended to transform Sega's business structure to adapt to the external environment. But the rumor is still that they are in prime position to be acquired. There are certainly rumors about Microsoft. There's even talk of Nintendo, which if anyone was going to acquire Sega, I would want it to be Nintendo.
Wouldn't that be
a trip?
Which
would be ironic.
That would be super ironic.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Like, if I could time travel to, you know, high school me and go, guess what? Nintendo owns Sega. People would look at me like I, you know, suddenly grew three extra
I know.
Heads.
I know. It's this ludicrous. It's the talk of, you know, Super Mario Brothers is going to come out for PlayStation 5. Like, the reaction you would have to that statement now is the reaction we would have had in college to Nintendo is in talks to buy Sega. Rumor. You know, even it's just like, no, come on. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. But it is not super ridiculous in today's understanding. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just been the slow decline of Sega, you know, but, oh, well, actually, which reminds me of another game that I played, Rob. I played Crazy Taxi on my iPad.
Good
and it
times.
Had the full sound. It had the full soundtrack.
Good.
Yeah. So, and anyway, I don't know why I didn't think about it until just now, but Sega. Sega.
Tiger Claw in chat says, I don't know about that. If Nintendo owns Sega, Nintendo would shut down all these Sonic fan games. Don't give them ideas. And there's certainly been the rumors about Microsoft for a long time. And then Phantasy Star Online agreement, or Phantasy Star Online 2, excuse me, agreement happened. And that just put fuel on the fire. So that would be an interesting one too, wouldn't it? So,
absolutely.
Yeah. I'd be very curious. I mean, I also am a big fan of Sega doing their own thing. I don't really like all these mega companies that are ending up. But if it has to be bought, it's going to be interesting either way that goes. If it is Nintendo, I mean, I would rather see Sega go to a company like Microsoft or Nintendo than Konami or EA. Oh,
I would
Don't let EA do a hostile takeover of that one. Blah.
I would rather see people leave some of the big companies just for the sake of building up Sega.
Yeah.
And make it a powerhouse again. Yeah, that would be wishful thinking, but it would be nice. It's a fantasy.
Pod Culture in chat says, imagine the Nintendo Dreamcast. Hey, the Dreamcast Mini could be a reality.
I've already seen it. Remember when they recompiled Mario 64 for the Dreamcast?
Oh, so yeah.
It's already a thing.
I'd love that if Microsoft did it, that they would invest in some of those Sega properties again. It'd be amazing. All right, let's move on. A few more stories for you, Loki.
Yeah, so we just got an update for Animal Crossing because, you know, there's more holidays right around the corner. So there was an update on the 28th of January. That's supposed to be prepping us for Valentine's Day, Game Day, Groundhog Day, and Festival. And
Festival.
Festival. Well, it's spelled Festival, okay? So
welcome to Night Festival.
Except that it's a foreign word, so.
Fine, whatever. I don't care. They've got the twerking peacock there. You know, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter.
Pave.
Twerking Peacock Festival. Yes.
Pave.
So that's going to be
I heard his name was Gay Rights. Because that's all I've heard about this event is that it's Gay Rights.
I love Pave.
I haven't seen the event yet. I haven't
Starting tomorrow, they're going to have a brand new set of outfits that are going to be available and new reactions, including Feeling It, Let's Go, Viva, and Confetti. That'd be fun.
Confetti would be fun, yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, so lots of new stuff. I've been trying to get my wife's been trying to get my son to play it because... Oh, no, that's my cat.
Oh. Hi, Stella.
Yeah, she's being loud. She knows that I'm... What do you want? So anyways, yeah, new holiday stuff. I'm still waiting for March when we're supposed to get the Nintendo stuff. That's really the only thing I'm interested in.
I think that's coming up later.
If anyone wants to know right now, seasonal items are out. They do have, like, a football rug and a glittery megaphone. I guess for the Super Bowl. And then there's also the Setsubun set where you throw out the beans for Setsubun. So,
all right,
pretty cool. I like that we actually get all the international stuff.
Yeah, that is nice that we it's not like locked to certain countries or whatever. So.
Oh, Ishkella.
Yes, for those that are watching live, unfortunately, it doesn't translate well into the podcast, but Loki picked up the kitty. And now the kitty. Oh, did the kitty just meow right in the mic?
She yes. sure did.
Sure did. Well, this where every kitty has a voice. I'd rather hear
like
what
I
that cat
get Midna now.
I'd rather hear what that cat has to say than some Twitter users, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Probably a better opinion too. All right. Well,
what is your stance on cat food? I'm for it.
All right. Let's move on while Loki takes a minute to cuddle Stella there. Let's talk about Plex, the movie company, getting into gaming a little bit. Plex is getting into a arcade service that they, I guess, unofficially launched this week with some old school games. So Plex is a media streaming service right now. I think I've heard of this, but I can't say I've used it before. And they do like TV and movies and audio and photos and things like that. And now, as of this week, they do Atari games. If you subscribe to Plex Arcade, you get Atari classics such as Asteroids, Missile Command, Centipede. There actually does appear to be a lot of them in here. Just kind of looking through some of the screenshots, a lot of the Atari classics are in there. First party stuff, you're not going to see the Activision stuff in there, like Pitfall, and because those are Activision games, just the first party Atari stuff. But they have stuff like, I can see the 7800 poking through, where they have like Ninja Golf is actually there, and I'm like, oh dang, those are some deep cuts in there. Anyhow, you can stream the games with Android, to Android, mobile or TV, iOS or tvOS, or any Chrome browser. And any Bluetooth controller will allow you to play them. But what's interesting about this, the Plex thing, which is either $3 a month if you're already a Plex Pass owner, or $5 a month if you don't have that, you can actually load your own ROMs onto this. And
what?
So this...
That's hair...
That's the part that made me go, well, because at first I'm like, okay, another company's getting into retro gaming, whatever. But then I was like, wait a minute, they're actually going to allow you to load your own ROMs and even like emulators into the library? That's the part where I'm like, and they're paying you to do it? Or I'm sorry, you're paying them for the privilege to do it? That part's very interesting. But I guess because Plex is a server type of thing, it's just the ease of playing it on your TV as opposed to, I don't know, having to set up a Raspberry Pi or whatever. And then you are legally getting all these Atari licenses with that. So that part's kind of interesting. So, Pod Culture in chat says, Zen, you are nuts. Plex works just fine and looks okay. Well, what did Zen say? Oh, Zen says, Plex has an awful UI that barely works half the time, and now they want to stream games? No, thank you. Dark Tetsuya says, the concept is neat, but I hear there's a lot of lag when you're streaming, at least in the demo I saw from YouTube. And Pixelpaka says the games suffer from lag. So, all right.
Why can't someone just bring back Game Room?
Yeah, right?
Seriously, like, why would that be so difficult? Like, that's you would think that someone would be able to come up with the same concept. It's just like, okay, hey, yeah, I have an arcade with stuff in it, and, you know, I can outfit it with games that you can play and stuff like that. I don't know.
I have AntStream, which is pretty good. It's a lot of Commodore and Spectrum games, and they're starting to get some Atari games in it. Disclosure, I backed their Kickstarter. That's why I'm still in it, because I'm in my second year at this point. I think my sub will finally run out this summer. I wish they'd get the client on Xbox Series X, though. They only have it on Xbox One, so it's weird to me that it's not on Series X, but for whatever reason, it's not. And it's on PC as well, but it streams everything. Like, it's cloud gaming. It's basically Stadia, but since it's all classic games, there's very little bandwidth actually being used because
yeah,
the resolution isn't
that
great. Yeah, and no, actually, there's a little bit of artifacting sometimes, but for the most part, especially in regards to being responsive and stuff, the game's fine. They just added classic Mortal Kombat not that long ago, like the original arcade Mortal Kombat. That kind of surprised me. So it was that. All right. Well, speaking of classic arcades, let's visit the classic game of the week. Every week, Dark Sakura steps into the gaming vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, you brats, you should check this game out. Load this onto your Plex server, although this one might be a little bit difficult. And this one This is also one of those choices, I think, for its uniqueness. But I guess I should let Dark Soccer speak to that. So Dark Soccer...
And I've brought this up in the past.
You have. So what is the classic game of the week? Which might take a second for the B-roll to appear, because I think I forgot to preload it. Sorry. But it'll come right up.
Well, not that there's really a lot going on that video.
True.
I believe I linked the Dreamcast one.
You did.
Because the Saturn has no video.
Yes.
But the game is Real Sound Kaze no Regret, or Wind of Regret. It was an audio adventure game that was developed by Warp. It was first released on the Sega Saturn in July 1997, and later on the Dreamcast in 1999. Real Sound was supposed to provide equal access for sighted and blind players. To go actually a little bit more itself, Warp's president, Kenji Eno, created the game after getting appreciation letters from blind fans of his games in Japan. And he was thinking that it would be great to have visually disabled fans have games that would be rich and involved that they could play and get into. I'm actually going to read a quote from 2008 in an interview with 1UP. I had a chance to visit people who are visually disabled, and I learned that there are blind people who play action games. Of course, they're not able to have the full experience, and they're kind of trying to force themselves to be able to play, but they're making the effort. So I thought that if you turn off the monitor, both of you are hearing the same game. So after you finish the game, you can have an equal conversation about it with a blind person. That was the inspiration behind Real Sound Kaze no Regret as well. So he was really excited about it, and he really pushed and really a bargaining thing with Sega. So he did that in exchange for exclusive rights to the game. So they would donate 1,000 Sega Saturn consoles to visually impaired people. And he also personally donated 1,000 copies of the game along with the consoles. And it's only been re-released once, but he said that it has to do with that deal he has with Sega. He's basically, it was the only thing that was limiting it that could only be released on a Sega console. So, it has actually pretty good voice cast in it, including a really popular drama actress, Miho Kano, Ai Maeda, who has done some amazing voice acting. Actually a really good composer, Keiichi Suzuki. He did The Blind Swordsman, Zatoichi, and Outrage. Akiko Yano did the ending theme. And the game was actually written by a screenwriter, Yuji Sakamoto. Really, really talented group of people that worked on it. So basically, the plot is about central elements, fear and love, in a story in Tokyo. So there's an elementary student is moved to a new school where she has to join new students and is seated next to a boy. The two fall in love, and they're really young and they want to elope, and they arrange to meet at the clock tower, but the girl Izumi never shows up as she's transferred away. And then they meet again as college students. And so they're dealing then with a mystery that has to do with the disappearance. And so that's leading into the story of the game. And there are, by the way, translations online for you can read, but it basically there is a version, the Dreamcast one specifically, that has a visual mode that gives you like a little bit of extra scenery with the game, but they both games still exclusively rely on the audio portions of the game. The Dreamcast visual mode is just really non-essential. And it's constructed as an interactive radio drama. So you're basically listening to the story as it unfolds, and you have different forks in your plot line, and you get a chime, and that you have to choose the course that the plot will take. Once you've confirmed your choice, then the plot resumes. So it's actually a choose-your-own-adventure kind of story. Very, very unique. So going further into it, the game really didn't sell very well. But it's really now considered a collector's item because of Enno's other titles. One of the cool things about this, especially for the collectability of it, is that you get different instructions, like, for example, in Braille, and you get seeds, a bag of herb seeds, as they're listed, in a transparent box with a cloud motif. I know someone who had the seeds. And that was what I brought up before. You know, we were talking about things that come with games.
Yeah.
You know, you could get a bag of seeds.
That's so random.
So a version of this game with only one path aired on a Tokyo FM in 1997. And then there were other games of his that were actually released by Real Sounds Gameplay. For example, for Enemy Zero, that came out in 97 on Saturn, there were enemies that were invisible and could only be located by sound. And D2, another of his games, 2000 on Dreamcast, really drew from the limitation to your sensory perceptions. So there are portions of the game where the character is rendered blind with only a voice to guide her. And alternatively, she another mode, deaf, where she only has her vision to guide her. There was a sequel that was planned called Kiri no Orge. It was in development to be the second game, and it was going to, I can't make words happen. It was going to be a horror theme. And they had ads for it in various magazines, but the couldn't release it due to voice compression technology. Some of the story arcs from Kiri no Orge were put into D2. And then into another game called, there was actually going to be another installment in the series called Spy Lunch, but that, of course, never developed. So, but this game is still actually popular amongst the visually disabled. And I really wanted to outline something that was made specifically with that community in mind. You know, there are gamers all across the ability scale one way or another. We have listeners of our show who are legally blind.
Yep.
And I think that it's great that there was a game that was released specifically for those people, and people in chat are talking about Plex and not listening, I guess. But
we're having some frame drops as well, so it might not just be because of that.
Okay.
Some but at any rate, out of my control.
At any rate, I felt this game kind of was very important to me that we mentioned it, just simply because, I mean, we have such an A-list designer who was thinking of a community that is so often left out of the gaming conversation. And I wish that more developers would have different things. Like, for example, say that, you know, for certain levels of the visually impaired, you have like a high contrast mode. Right?
Right. Well, and Last of Us Part 2 had a lot of this type of stuff, which was great.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. But I think that there need to be more games that are created with our other ability communities in mind. Yeah.
I'm going to bring it back to the main shot of us away from the footage just because I want to see if that fixes some of our issues. I might not. Sorry, we're getting internet drops that are kind of out of my control. I don't know what the hell's going on. Sorry.
All right. Well, at any rate, I would have really liked to have had the other stories come out. It just seems so fun to have like a drama that you can play. Of course, my comprehension when I almost bought a copy of the game, but my comprehension was not where it needed to be to play it properly.
Right.
So I wonder if I would be able to go back and play it now. Maybe not.
I was just to say, the vibe I kind of get from the game, you know, even though it's very light on the graphics, because obviously it's with a different medium in mind.
Well, the Saturn had none.
But I still get that vibe of like an old CD-ROM game that, you know, you kind of have those very like photographic quality visuals, but they were very simple.
Like Mist?
In a way, I guess, but even more like Mist wasn't really photorealistic, whereas like, you know, the game we were looking at here was very photorealistic in a way.
Well, yeah.
I think it's kind of neat because it just that early CD-ROM technology really tried to like, oh, make it look real, you know? I'd almost say in a way like, I don't know, something like Phantasmagoria, right? It was like real people.
Phantasmagoria was great.
Right, and like a real scene and all this stuff. You know, it's just... Even though it was all cheesy B community theater special effects, still, you know, that game was kind of legendary for all of that. And I think, you know, this game that you just showed us kind of, you know, it still has that photorealism, obviously just to try to invoke images probably of the story that's being told. But, you know, even for, because unfortunately, I think sometimes people hear this, you know, this is true. People hear, oh, this is a game made for a certain audience. And if that audience isn't them, then they're like, then what's here for me? Nothing, you know, and they skip over it. Right. But like, this seems like the type of thing that like could actually just be totally meant to like, you kind of have playing on the TV or whatever, and you're just chilling on the couch, kind of laying back, eyes closed. You don't even have to look at the game. You can experience the media in a different way. And so it's like, yeah. It's sometimes about broadening the way you consume things, which I think is interesting.
Well, and the thing is that there are very few games that are just audio only. Another one that comes to mind is Papa Sangre, which actually just got a sequel in 2013, but it's a horror themed audio game that came out on iOS. So there's a few other ones. Like there's also Chillingham is another one that came out in 2004. But I picked this one in particular simply because it was one of the big games that really put a lot of focus on it in Japan. It's a damn shame we never got a version of it here. I think that certainly, or at least had other language releases in general, because I think a lot of people would have benefited from it.
Well, and there was really nothing like it on the Dreamcast or the Saturn. You know, but I call it the Dreamcast specifically because the Dreamcast was always that weird system, you know? And there was another off the track of usual stuff thing that it tried. And, you know, just I bet a lot of people didn't even know this existed.
But it's definitely one of those more interesting games.
For sure.
And hopefully my goal is, this might sound like a little odd goal, but I would like to one day have my listening comprehension be good enough to play this game.
All right.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, thank you.
Real Sound Kaze no Regret.
Okay. Your classic game of the week. Very, I thought I've heard of them all, but I did not hear of this game until looking at it for tonight's show. So very cool.
Well, I did tell you about it, about the seeds.
You did, but you tell me about a lot
the
of games.
Audio.
But this is the first time I've actually like seen it, you know, and gotten to, you know, check it out. So
wait till you see the fucking weird game I picked for next month.
All right, can't wait. Oh yeah, because we're still in January. We're still in this like. There's a lot of five episodes in January this month.
I already have next week's regular game picked out, but the week after is going to be the weirdo.
Oh, perfect. That'll be just in time for Valentine's Day. So perfect.
Well, yeah. Then you know when I'll tell you what it is early, Rob, and you'll laugh your face off. So
okay. Well, obviously not now. Don't ruin it for the listeners. But tell me later. Text it or something.
I will.
Yes, there is that little football game on TV next week. Although that's never stopped us before. Not going to stop us from doing a show next week. Did you pick something themed with the football game? Is that why you already know next week?
Nope.
Oh, okay. I was just curious. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about, the only thing I care about with those games, the commercials are kind of neat sometimes. And I did see, cause y'all posted about it in Discord, I saw that whole like Wayne's World is coming back. Like they actually have Mike Myers and Dana Carvey doing a Wayne's World for, I guess it's Uber Eats, who also had, you know, I keep wanting to say Jean-Luc Picard, but that's not his name. Patrick Stewart and Skywalker.
Mark Hamill.
We're in a commercial together for Uber Eats. So they've been paying a lot of big celebrities. So they got Mike Myers and Dana Carvey to reunite and do Wayne's World. So I guess that's a commercial for the Super Bowl. So that's kind of neat, I guess. I like the commercials sometimes. But you can see them all online the day before or the day after. Easy, easy. And then usually...
I care about the Puppy Bowl.
Usually,
the Kitty Halftime.
The Puppy Bowl and the Kitty Halftime. Which aren't Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg doing it this year or something? Somebody posted something in Discord about like Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg are doing the Animal Bowl.
Snoop
this year.
Is trending on Twitter right now.
Huh. Chat.
And I think it's for the Super Bowl.
All right.
The Superb Owl.
And then the other thing I usually care about is the halftime show. Like when Beyonce did the halftime show, life. When Lady Gaga did the halftime show, life. When Beyonce did the halftime show again, but she just snuck in there as part of Coldplay, life. Like it was great. I think this year they have The Weeknd doing it. I don't even
care about the halftime show.
I like his stuff. I'd be curious to see how it comes out. I love the synthy vibe a lot of his songs have. He has a very like old school Michael Jackson sound to him, which I really dig. But I think he has a ton of guest stars too. I don't think it's just him. I'd be curious to see how that turns out. But yeah. Anyway. All right. Moving on. Let's get into some rapid fire news. Loki, let's start us off with some quick stories. Loki.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit last week about what the Games for Gold for February are going to be. But now let's talk about PlayStation Plus. So for PlayStation 5, we've got Destruction All-Stars. And then we have on PlayStation 4, Control Ultimate Edition, which is also on PS5. And Concrete Genie, all pretty solid titles, actually. So that's going to be for February. And then we got news that there was a baseball game that's, you know, NBA Jam or what was it? NFL. I can't remember the NFL one. Anyways, NFL Blitz. That's right. And so they had a game coming that was being worked on called Power Up Baseball, and it was developed in the mid 90s by Midway and Incredible Technologies. Of course, it never actually came out, but because the Video Game History Foundation is awesome, you can actually play a ROM of it on MAME and check out the game itself. So that is pretty cool.
Neat.
And I don't know, it just never came out because I guess. I don't know, they maybe thought that they didn't translate as well as, say, NBA Jam or NFL.
Maybe
Blitz,
maybe the licensing didn't come through for some of the people. I bet that could be an issue, too.
So, but, yeah, it looks pretty cool. And get a chance to play something that, you know, could have been.
Yeah. And a shout out, because Jason, who, you know, does all our voiceovers and did an amazing job with the intro, as always. Jason talked about some other alternative, like, action-y baseball type of games that did come out, like Baseball Stars. I remember that one, and that's a great one as well. So, yeah.
That on Neo Geo.
Yeah. Well, there was a version on NES, believe it or not. Because SNK
did. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, yeah, but it's probably better known for Neo Geo for sure. But, yeah. All right. Moving on. Let's talk about Destiny 2, which Destiny 2 is going to be changing up the way it does rewards a little bit. There will no longer be weekly bounties. They're going to go to seasonal challenges to try to make things feel a little less grindy, I guess. So that is what you can do now. So there's some goals that Bungie went through and how to make the game more fun in other words, provide a guide to new, returning, and veteran players for what to do today or this week. Guide the player through the seasonal content week over week. Encourage players to engage with the complexities and nuances of the seasonal activity and rituals. And reduce the penalties on XP and Bright Dust for missing a given week. So they've done seasonal challenges now that you do objectives. And you can do objectives during the week, but you have until the end of the season really to complete them, not just that 1 week period. So, you know, you see a lot of games doing seasonal things. So Destiny 2 going that direction makes sense. I have been playing that a little bit on Series X. I haven't played in the last week or two, but it's a real pretty game. They definitely souped it up for Series X. It looks real good. So I should play some more of that. That's for sure. And man, I wish they had something like this when I was younger. Lego just put out their own type of app that is for music video making for kids. It's called Video, but it's V-I-D-I-Y-O. Video. That's basically what it is. So this is a app that allows kids to make their own music videos. When you have certain, of course, Lego figures and blocks, you scan them into the app and it makes the characters go into song and dance with AR. And then, of course, because it's all AR, you can choose where you want to put the characters in the real world and then kind of, you know, use your camera to shoot them a little bit. Some of the music comes from Universal Music Group's pop roster, and there are 60-second samples, so they don't put the whole songs in there, but you can make a little bit of a sample there. And I think that's really cute. Like, you know, get kids, you know, making their own movies when they're young. I think that's pretty cool. And a good use of that AR technology. Interesting to see Lego doing that again, because, of course, you know, we talked a lot about the Mario Legos they've done towards the end of last year, and that used a lot of interesting technology as well. So Lego's really pushing the envelope, y'all.
Right. They've also got, well, aside from that, they have their stop motion studio thing that they had a set that you could use your phone to do that. They've been pushing stuff with Unity. They have their whole Lego, you know, I guess not really a tutorial, but it's kind of like a kit that you can create stuff with. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they've been doing a lot of stuff with like gaming involved.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's move on. Dark Sakura.
Of course, Animal Crossing Happiness. I was so thrilled when I saw this, even though I pretty much already have the cards. They are doing the Sanrio Amiibo cards. They're coming out at Target, exclusively at Target, on March 26th. They are six different cards. These were actually put out for the Welcome Amiibo edition of Animal Crossing New Leaf. So you get Rilla, who is the Hello Kitty gorilla, who's kind of creepy. You get Marty. Huh?
I'm just laughing.
Oh yeah, she is. You get Marty, who is the a yellow pom-pom-pourin character. You have Chai, who is so cute. She's an elephant with a teacup on her head, and she's for pom-pom-pourin. Chelsea is My Melody. Toby is Keropi. I actually really liked his set in Pocket Camp too. And Etoile, who is Little Twin Stars, which Little Twin Stars is my favorite Sanrio group. What I don't see on here, though, is if you're going to be able to welcome the characters.
Yeah,
it says right here that it's only going to be to unlock the in-game posters, which, I mean, I already have. But I'm really hoping that they put out a patch to give us those animals, because it would be nice for me to have Etoile in my... in my village.
Yeah, that's what I was hopeful about too. But then I guess, you know, if these cards have existed in Japan already since the game's launch, then if the characters were going to be there, they'd be there. But I still am crossing my fingers and toes that maybe with the unveiling of the cards officially in the US, maybe they'll patch the game and add the villagers. And then Japan can enjoy that too, because I imagine either they have the cards accessible or they could do a reprint pretty easily.
Well, and on top of that, if you still have New Leaf, then you can get the characters there, I reckon.
Mm.
Well, and since they also have furniture in New Leaf as well.
Well, yeah, that was the point of them. They brought in different furniture sets.
Those furniture sets are cute too. I want them in the new one. Like, why?
I played Pocket Camp and I had like all of Etoile's stuff and Toby's, the Keropi set.
Yeah.
The Keropi set was like ultra Japanese. It was so cute.
But why restrict it to the 3DS version of the game that's so old? But I guess, you know, people want,
because
the
they were
too,
made for the 3DS version.
I know, but the amiibos were made for certain things, and then they used them in later games. Like, most amiibo were for Smash Brothers originally.
Well, right. There are a lot of Animal Crossing characters who I have physical amiibo for, and I have their cards that the character is not in the game. Like...
Ooh.
Remember I had my Pascal poster before I could get a picture with Pascal before his model was out?
Mm-hmm.
I had the Pave poster. I sent you the Pave poster.
Yes, I have the Pave poster.
And now I can get Pave in my studio, you know, because I have the card, but like you can't get Chip. You can't get Porter or Booker and Copper. Or, well, for a while you couldn't get the llamas, and then they did their little wedding thing, and then you could get them. But you can't get Pelly or Phyllis. Well, I love Phyllis. She's so grumpy.
Maybe that's just what it is. We have to wait for more events, because we've been getting some of them as they've released events. Like Pave's a good example of that, of the events that they're doing. We just have to wait for more events, I guess. But these Hello Kitty ones are villagers, and so that would be... neat if they would let them move into the village, but I guess it's a lot to ask
I don't
for.
See it happening, though, unless they figure out some way to do it. But at least the thing with this Animal Crossing is that the game we have now is not quite the same game we got when it came out.
True.
It's got lots of other stuff to do. So moving on, since this is supposed to be rapid fire, Nintendo... Huh?
I'm just laughing.
Oh. Nintendo announced a Monster Hunter Rise Special Edition Switch and also a Switch Pro controller for the same that will be out when the game is released in Japan on March 26th. The price will be 38,400 yen, so roughly about, you know, $380 US. And it has, of course, the dock, the unit, the Joy-Cons that are all Monster Hunter Rise themed. And then you can also get the digital copy of the game. And for the pre-order bonus, there's a deluxe kit with downloadable content. It looks cool. I'm not into Monster Hunter, but it looks cool.
Yeah.
Nothing, of course, about, you know, the U.S. So.
All right. Well, let's travel around the world, starting in the U.S. and looking at the rest of the world, too, and check out what will be coming out in release dates. Loki.
Yes. So this week we have Cultist Simulator on Nintendo Switch. Destruction All-Stars on PlayStation 5. Ease 9 Monstrum Nox on PlayStation 4. We have Habroxia 2 on PC, PlayStation 4, Vita, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. Haven on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. Skyforge on Nintendo Switch. Werewolf the Apocalypse Earthblood on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. Neo Remastered the Complete Edition on PlayStation 5, as well as Neo 2 Remastered the Complete Edition on PlayStation 5. And then on PC and PlayStation 4, Neo 2 the Complete Edition. And that's it.
All right. Well, Japan's list is pretty short this week. Just that Neo collection, Neo 1 and 2 on the PlayStation 5. And then, as you were saying, Neo 2 kind of remastered on the PlayStation 4. That is it. Those are the sole releases in Japan this week. So how about the UK, Dark Sakura?
Only a handful. We have Werewolf the Apocalypse Earthblood on the 4th of February. And then on the 5th, we have Anima Arcane Edition and Ghost of a Tale Collector's Edition.
All right. That's it. All right. Well, we have a few more stories for you guys before we get to the listener roundtable via our chat as well as our mailbag. And you can always email the show, participate@orangeloungeradio.com if you want to drop us a line via email. But let's get to some more news. Loki?
So everybody's probably familiar with the game Celeste. I was unaware that the game originally was released on the Pico 8 back in 2016. And now, Extremely OK Games is creating a sequel for that Pico 8 version called Celeste 2, Lonnie's Trek, which is actually available to download now for free. So that's pretty sweet. And you can find that on itch.io. Check it out there. But I had no idea that that was actually a game on the Pico 8.
Yeah,
but
I didn't realize that either. That's pretty cool, though. That game's everywhere now, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see if they're gonna, you know, port that over to the like the newer style or something like that. That'd be kind of cool, but yeah, have to check it out.
Yeah, why not? Why not let this sequel get some of that too? Because you know, it was, and they've given it away like as a plus game or a gold game, and you know, there's a lot of ways. Epic Store, I think, had it as their free game at one point. So there's a lot of ways you've probably added this to your library at some point. And it is, it's not just like, oh yay, free game. It actually is a really like. Like bang your head against the wall, tough like platformer, but it's, you know, kind of one of those.
Yeah.
I would compare it a lot to Super Meat Boy, like back when it was good. To like, you know, oh, just one more. I'm gonna try this level one more time. I'm gonna beat it this time. It's that whole kind of thing. It's a neat game. So, all right. Moving on. Let's talk about a remaster that didn't happen, but man, I wish it would have. And that is a GoldenEye 007. It was originally going to be for Xbox Live Arcade. Now, please don't confuse this with the version of GoldenEye that ended up being on the Wii by Activision a little bit later. This is not that. This was something else that was supposed to happen that was actually, and some of the footage has actually been released now. So there's a YouTube out there where somebody's actually playing it through an emulator. So they're actually able to see it in like 4K resolution and 60 frames a second. But you can tell it's a 360 game. I mean, it still looks really good. It looks even better than the Nintendo 64 game. And they even do some multiplayer in it. Same screen multiplayer, which is how most people remember GoldenEye 007 was playing it with friends at a party or in a college dorm or something like that. This whole exercise was from 2007 because Rare, being owned by Microsoft, developed the HD remaster of the Nintendo 64 Classic. Unfortunately, thanks to copyright disputes, it didn't happen. That's a bummer. Of course, we got the Activision version, which for the Wii was, you know, the Wii didn't have a lot of great shooters. And apparently this, I didn't play a lot of it. I think I played it at E3 real quick one year. But apparently a lot of people said it really wasn't bad. Like, it could have been a lot worse as far as like remasters go. And they did a pretty decent job on the Wii. But I think there's a lot of people that want to see what Rare themselves would have done. And this is certainly it. So there's rumors that they're going to release this in 2021 as some type of Xbox thing. Hey, if they get the licensing and all that stuff worked out, go off. Like, what? Hey, if they added that to Game Pass, that's just another cool thing on Game Pass, in my opinion. So, yeah. Especially since, how many same room multiplayer games are there anymore? There's so few, right? So, anyway. Dark Tetsuya says, I do believe the Wii version got re-released on PS3 and 360 as well. Did it? I only ever remember the Wii one, but you're probably right. I just remember the motion controller. Of course, that was the big thing they were pushing, right? Because on the Wii, and some games did this very well, where you'd point at the screen to shoot, and it was almost like using a mouse and keyboard. It was like mouse and controller. It was really weird, but it worked. It worked really well. Yeah. So, but some games did this better than others, but the GoldenEye remaster was one of them that did it pretty well. All right, moving on. Dark Sakura.
A little discussion, especially with the particular game Astral Chain. Platinum said that Nintendo is the owner of the IP. This came after fans noticed that the game's copyright had... that there was a change to the game's copyright. So Platinum had said before that it was co-owned by itself and Nintendo, in addition to them having the game's publishing rights. And they had even talked about one day it might come, you know, to non-Nintendo platforms, but basically there was the change in the copyright notice had been modified to remove the mention of Platinum Games. And so they came right out and says, it's as it looks. It is Nintendo. And it's on their website as it's Nintendo. And they say that right now Platinum Games is not in a position to answer the question to clarify anything about that change in ownership.
I wonder if Nintendo's planning on doing something with it, hence the change. It's interesting.
Maybe.
Speaking of Platinum and Nintendo, how about an update on Bayonetta 3, Platinum? Like... I'm sure I'm not the only one to ask this, but it's been a little while since we heard anything about Bayonetta 3. And
it'd be crappy if Sega does get sold, you know, will it to someone who's not Nintendo?
I doubt they'll do that. I think the agreement would already be in writing. I don't think they'd be able to do it. I mean, I guess anything's possible. I don't know. But still, I'm all about take the time to get it right. You know, don't rush the game. There's been a pandemic. I get all that. Still, just a little teaser, a new little update would be wonderful. That would give me the energy I need to get through the year. So hopefully the Switch is just setting up for a badass year. Maybe Bayonetta 3 got pushed to be a Switch Pro game. One can dream. But can you imagine that? The new Zelda and a new Metroid game, like, all hitting at once? Like, oh, that'd be such a hot year. Like, if that's what the Switch Pro is lining up, that's a hot launch lineup. I'm fanboying. None of this is based in reality whatsoever, but what a hot lineup that would be. That's for sure. All right. Moving on, Loki.
Yeah, so some more Cyberpunk updates. So we talked about how there was the 1.1 update, which did fix some stuff, but also introduced some game-breaking bugs. So now there's the 1.11 update that will fix those game-breaking bugs that they last patch introduced. So they went ahead and released those already, the hot fix for that. And it's taking care of some of the issues that were in that. There's also some more updates coming as well. Second one's due out in a few weeks. So we'll have to wait and see what that improves as well. But at least to see that they're addressing some of the issues like they had with the holo calls not coming through and stuff like that. And then on a completely different topic, so there's been mods for Cyberpunk 2077 that allows you to change who the different joy toys are in the game. So those are the like cybernetic prostitutes. And so, of course, since Johnny Silverhand is in the game, they've went ahead and swapped out the character that's normally the quote-unquote joy toy and put Keanu Reeves in there. Or you can also put in one of the other characters that they had in there as well. But
Loki. Was there any doubt that once we knew that Cyberpunk would yes, be a PC game, and that, yes, Keanu Reeves would be in the game, was there any doubt that the modding community was going to come along and be like, how long until I can fuck Keanu Reeves? Are we shocked? Are we shocked?
I'm not.
We're not shocked.
So apparently, okay. Though, what is interesting, though, is apparently they have removed that mod. It is not available.
Nothing is ever truly removed.
I know, yeah. So Nexus mods did take it down, but you know, I'm sure you can find it out there. So
boy, Nexus mods is having a week, aren't they?
Yeah, apparently. Well, CG. So it came to the way it got taken down is it came to CD Projekt Red's attention. The studio had said that our most important rule regarding user generated content. Game mods in particular is that it can't be harmful towards others. In the case of model swaps, especially those involved in explicit situations, it can be perceived as such by people who lent us their appearance for purposes of creating characters in Cyberpunk 2077.
Sorry, internet. You'll just have to fuck your Keanu Reeves body pillow you bought on Wish. I mean,
whatever. It could have been a lot worse. He was still clothed in the scenes from what I saw, but then again, the video that they were showing, a lot of that was cut and like blacked out. But I mean, it's just a model swap, so. But I'm sure it can be much worse. And of course,
it's early. That game's only been out a couple months. It's early. Now, the correct way to phrase that is not "it could be much worse." It will be much worse.
It's true. Very true.
Let's revisit the story in 6 months and see what perverse things the internet has come up with now.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, hey, now that they have the 3D model out there, I mean, I'm sure it'll be a matter of time before we see him added to Skyrim or something like that.
All right. Let's move on. Let's see. Oh, a comment from Marissa Mizell in our chat who says, the union has been taking things like this seriously, not just because of funny sex things, but so actors are exploited for things they weren't paid for. You know, that is, I've heard about that in regards to who was in the game. Was it Heavy Rain with the shower scene? Was that Elliot Page? Or was it somebody else?
No, Elliot Page was in the sequel. She was in the... oh gosh, I don't remember what it was with like. What the hell was that?
Why do I remember? Why do I remember? Remember, it's he now. But yes, I understand when in the game. But let's see, Elliot Page. There was like a shower scene or something, and they had rendered breasts, and that was really infuriating to Elliot Page because. Obviously,
it was Beyond Two Souls.
That's it. That's Beyond Two Souls. Thank you. And that was not part of the agreement, basically. And so when that, even though that wasn't in the game, like, I think modders found that, and that infuriated that camp, Elliot Page's, you know, and his representation and so forth. And so I believe this is that kind of issue that Marissa's bringing up in chat as well, is that, yeah, you got to be very careful when you have these likenesses in the game, what you can and can't render. Unfortunately, you know, the modding community, you can't stop them. That's
modders gonna mod.
Modders gonna mod. Yeah. So I think it also goes to, like, but how much ammunition did you give them, right? In the case of Beyond Two Souls and Elliot, it was, you know, the breasts were rendered in the game, I guess, and this whole thing. Even though they weren't shown, they were rendered. But it gave the modders ammunition because it's like, oh, we don't have to invent breasts because they're in the game. But in the case of Keanu Reeves, I'm sure his dong was not rendered for the game. But it's probably not even shown, right? They probably just do, like, more of a suggestive sexual scene, I'm guessing. I don't know. I haven't played the mod. I'm not going to. But, yeah. Interesting. Bobby Blackwolf reminds us, The Sims is an AO game because of mods. So says former lawyers. Yeah. Yeah. So interesting, interesting. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. I got one more story for you guys, and this is about Sonic changing voice actors. And this is kind of a big deal, like when David Hayter left the role of Solid Snake. It was kind of a big thing. So Roger Craig Smith is the name of the guy who's been voicing Sonic the Hedgehog for quite some time, and on Twitter, like 10 years, right? So on Twitter, he mentioned no more. He does say that, I guess a Sega rep has commented to some gaming blogs that, of course, they're thankful to Roger. And nothing was said, of course, openly about why is the change going on. But fans on Twitter are speculating that Ben Schwartz from the movie is going to be taking over the role moving forward, which makes sense because I know they're about to shoot that sequel because I saw one of the actresses on some talk show circuit thing and that's supposed to be in it, and she was commenting on that
starting in March.
Yeah, so it's not surprising that Ben Schwartz is coming back, but that is, you know, it does create kind of that disparity between movie role and everything else role. I mean, at the same time, what, Mark Hamill was playing the Joker in the cartoons for years and years and years and years and years. That didn't stop Heath Ledger from the movies and all this other stuff, even though Mark Hamill is a perfectly fine actor. But anyway, it's such is the industry. So Sega says, you know, Roger's portrayal of Sonic is one that fans are sure to remember. He brought the character to life, da-da-da. And then the unsaid thing is, you know, but he's still fired and let go. He was very happy, though. Roger Craig Smith was very thankful for all the outpouring of love that he got on social media and lots of people saying nice things about him. So there was that as well. So, also, I need to make sure I say this at some point, also in voice actor and actress news. This is really sad, but I have to mention this somewhere in the show and tip our hats to Jeanette Mouse, who was an actor, actually, for Resident Evil Village, who passed away at 39. Jeanette played, and I'm sorry, I don't know the game, The Village, very well, but she played one of, I guess, witches in the Resident Evil Village.
I think it's the new one.
It's the giant woman.
Is it?
Yeah,
really?
It's supposed to be the new Resident Evil. A demo just came out.
Oh, why did I think this was the last one? Wow,
no, it's the new one.
Oh my gosh! In that same week that everybody's going crazy 39. About that character, yeah, she's 39. She was in some films called Your Sister's Sister and My Effortless Brilliance. Which was a movie that she actually co-wrote as well. And no information has been said as to why she passed, but the Hollywood Reporter is saying she was fighting colon cancer for the past 8 months. But they haven't said that that was because she may have contracted COVID, and when the cancer's going, you know, we don't know. But still sad. Probably all cancer. The same. I didn't realize it was that same character. My gosh, right? And, you know, and that's right when, you know, she's getting, you know, say what you will about all those memes and all that stuff that's out there about that character, but that's just great press for that actress. And so that really, really is horrible that she was taken from us really at her prime with that. So it's very sad. So tipping our hat for that. All right. let's move on and get into our listener roundtable. So we're going to talk a little bit with our emails and any questions that you guys have in chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. If you have any questions for us, we're happy to take those on. So meanwhile, let's open up the mailbag. Participate at orangelaundradio.com is the place where you can send your emails every week. And Dark Soccer is going to open up ye old mailbag.
Oh, I'm not going to open spammer again. Okay, there we go. I think we looked it up because it was funny. But the emails are still taking like forever to load for me.
Yeah.
So
I saw one in there and it was really short, but I'll let you see if
there's
you
two.
Okay, then another one must have just come
But the problem is that the mailbox has been taking like a really long time to open lately on this computer. I mean, this computer's ready to go.
Sorry, I just want to say DJ Rama asked in regards to the last story, wanted to add Capcom. Oh, I thought you said Capcom did. Oh, well, Capcom better put an in memoriam to her in the game. Yes, they should. Sorry, when I first read that, I heard Capcom did. But he's saying that he wants to see that in the game. And I would agree. That would be very appropriate. I hope they do that. Sorry, Jamie.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, while I'm waiting for this to load, I did find something funny going back to the whole Reddit army thing.
Sure.
Now they're looking at commodities. So silver prices are jumping to a high.
I was like, commodity. Oh, those things. Okay.
Yeah. So now they're looking to silver. They basically bought shares in an Australian mining firm, and they bought big, and they like they leapt to 15%. So it was pretty crazy.
Why silver?
Because they're shorting that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So right now it's at $28.99 an ounce. And this email still hasn't fucking loaded.
Time to melt down all the jewelry.
No. The stupid email. Now it just loaded. Okay. And it's kind of a big one. So, dear OLR, I just wanted to note that I thought you guys did an incredible job in explaining sexuality and how it relates to furries, in addition to the fandom not being purely a sexual thing. Jamie used the word community. Using the word community was appropriate, as that's exactly what a furry is, a community that shares a mutual love of anthropomorphic animals across multiple media forms. Yes, there is sex, and that isn't what defines it. Ask yourself what may be going on behind closed doors at your local anime con. Let people be people, whatever they, whether they have sexual attractions or not. Hell, I'll admit that Star Fox has had me hot and bothered for as long as I can remember, but I also won't judge you for eyeing a poster of Faye Valentine from Cowboy Bebop. One more thought. Honestly, the best way to understand furry is just to go to a furry convention when it's safe to have cons again. I identified with furries for a long time, but didn't really get it until I went to my first AnthroCon in 2013. Friends were made at those cons that I'll have for life. And the level of love and acceptance I get from that community is wholly different. It's comfort I can't have with my friends who don't understand why I find fursuiting so magical. I compare it to other conventions where you go because you are a fan of an anime or a comic book series. In furry, we're fans of each other and the characters we create. That's what makes it special. I implore you to check out a convention, even if your interest is only fleeting. It just might ignite a spark. Thanks for reading, Garth Wolf. P.S. Rob, bring back guys on a show.
I had a feeling this email when the first paragraph might have been from this individual, but great. I'm happy you were happy with the way we represented that on the show, and I don't think there's a lot else to comment on that email. I think you made a request there that I think is very fair. So that's really all there is to say on that.
Well, now I'm waiting 5 years for this other one to open.
Okay.
How about anyone got any stories while I'm waiting for this damn email?
Well, I was also going to go to chat and look at some comments there in our chat room. Tiger Consat says there's also people out there who don't find humans attractive, but find anthropomorphic characters attractive. I don't think it's a link. I think maybe kink or anything, but some people do feel that way. So as long as you have consent, as long as you're not hurting anyone or pushing it on anyone else, as long as everybody is the age of consent, I think this is another important thing to put out there. Anything I might be missing? So have a safe word.
Opened.
All right. I was going to say, though, about the whole, like, because in the email it went into, you know, let me have the furry thing. You have your Cowboy Bebop poster. Or I would argue, since we just brought up that character from Resident Evil, I saw all sorts of things on Twitter about that. So everybody's got their thing. We'll leave it at that. Go ahead, Jamie.
Mm. It's still loaded, by the way.
Oh, it still hasn't loaded?
No.
I can get to
stupid.
It.
It was I finally started watching Drag Race, though.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I have one person I loathe and one person I love already.
I can guess both of those.
Okay, who do you think I hate?
Candy. That's who everybody hates.
Yeah. Who do you think I love?
Tamisha Iman, because that's the correct answer.
Mm-mm-mm. Gottmik.
Gottmik's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think the winner is very, very obvious, though, and it's none of those people we just named. But
we'll see.
All right. Anyhow, let's move on. This email. I got the email up because I get them on my phone as well.
Okay.
This person did not sign the email, and I don't feel comfortable reading the two line because I don't know what this person prefers to be called. So I will call this anonymous email. And also just a reminder, if you want us to read your name on air, which we're happy to do, don't forget to sign the email with whatever you want to be called, and help Jamie out with the pronunciation if it's tough. But this is unsigned, and it's very simple. It's one sentence. I would think it would be sent from the phone if it didn't. But it doesn't say sent with my iPhone at the bottom. the question is, what is the best song in video games? From our anonymous listener. What is the best song in video games? You know what? That's a very basic, simple Jacked question, but one that we haven't touched on in a long time. Well, I don't think the emailer expects us to give the definitive answer, but what is our favorite song in video games? What is the best song to us in video games? I have some answers, but I'll let you guys go first.
I'm trying to remember if it was used in the game. I think it was used in the game. I want to say that, well, Info High was in the Macross Plus movie, but I do believe that it was it was in one of the games, Uta Macross Smafo de Culture. But I can use that song because it was in a game. I'm kidding. Honestly, I don't know that there's a best song because there's so many different genre I can't really choose one.
Okay, this is easy for me. I'll do it. so for me, the Final Fantasy XIV soundtrack has been a huge reason why I stay with that game.
That's,
I think,
a really good soundtrack.
Soken has done amazing things with the legacy that Nobuo Uematsu started and really taken it in a modern direction. And honestly, if you're going to start anywhere, start with the prologue from Realm Reborn. Start with the basic, like the crystal theme, the do 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 do. Listen to that, because that is the character creation music in Final Fantasy XIV, and it is so, like, it is the perfect version of that song. Literally the perfect version of that song, and it's in Final Fantasy XIV. And that it, you know, there's other stuff, like there's some primal fights that have amazing music, and there's just so many different varieties and genres. I think Soken is the best video game composer we have out there right now, and it's a damn shame he's only doing one game. He fingers, toes, and everything else I have crossed that perhaps he is doing Final Fantasy XVI. But that's a lot of work for one person, because 14 is enough. Like, there's hundreds of tracks in 14. But I think he is a brilliant, brilliant person.
I'm actually going to go with a song from a game that I don't really care for, but it introduced me to one of my favorite singers.
Mm-hmm.
So Kiss Me Goodbye by Angela Aki.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. She's got such a fantastic voice. She's actually, I think, in the U.S. now finishing up some music production. Mm-hmm. But she's just one of my favorite vocalists ever. And I even remembered reading an interview where she said she had a dream of playing at the Budokan. She had actually been to a Sheena Ringo concert, who's another singer I like. Mm. And she got her start with Final Fantasy games.
Mm.
And was a year later, she's playing at the Budokan.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how, like, the music from video games have really influenced some of the artists today. Like, that that Porter Robinson has some pretty good music CDs and stuff. And my understanding is he's influenced by, like, Beatmania and DDR. Like, so, like, he is an artist that kind of represents a lot of that stuff that we all loved, you know, when we were in our 20s, although this guy's younger, so I imagine he was more of a kid when he heard a lot of this stuff. But I think that's really cool. And then you listen to his stuff, and it's... You can hear it. You can hear the Beatmania influence in a lot of his music. So
I will go back to something else, which I'm going to probably go on record saying it probably has one of my overall favorite video game soundtracks, is Chrono Trigger.
Yep.
Because To Far Away Times will always make me choke up a little bit, just mm-hmm. you know, somewhere a little bit in my heart. And the theme of Zeal, or Shala's theme.
Mm-hmm.
That one also is one of my favorites.
So I didn't quite get to finish, but I was going to say, no, it's okay. It's okay. Cause you kind of didn't get your answers out there, but until now, but, I was going to say, so if I was to get away from the MMOs a little bit, especially cause I can't really pinpoint a specific song in that game, I was going to say Scar of Time. For even though Chrono Cross is not the greatest game of my life, that intro and that song, like, were stunning. They especially that song. And that's, like, just, I think, a definitive, like, all-time classic game song. My third and final answer for this question would be, because I would say a song that is extremely versatile, meaning, like, an 8-bit song that has just been reimagined time and time again in glorious ways. And this song is amazing every single time I've heard it reinterpreted. Like, I think it's a song that can't be bad. Would be the overworld theme from The Legend of Zelda, throwing it back. Like, how many times have we heard that song remixed, orchestral? What is it ever bad? I mean, I guess maybe I'm challenging the internet with that question, but you know what I mean? Like, that song is just so versatile and so brilliant. Like, it represents my childhood, really. So, that would be my answer. Loki, I see the chat is lighting up on this. I want to get to you guys too. But Loki, I gotta ask you the email question as well. What's the best video game song?
I don't know. I mean, there's lots of good stuff. It's hard to pick the best.
It is.
I don't know. Like, if I'm going to go back to, like, DDR stuff, I'd say anything by Naoki. So...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, the one that kind of stands out to me that I used to play a lot on my cabinet is D2R. That's kind of encompassing, like, kind of the Naoki song style with, like, a Brilliant to You, Before You, or anything like that. But, you know.
Did you hear that Stepmaniacs has new Naoki songs? Like, they got him.
I know.
Over there.
Stepmaniacs is awesome.
I know, like, good for them. Good for them.
They have a lot. They have the whole song library now of the whole Bomani series because it's just like it's all being brought back in there. But yeah, like, I know he's got new stuff in there. So it's pretty cool.
All right. Let me get some of the chat answers. You guys are blowing up chat in the best way. And you guys have some great answers here. Let's see. Dragon Samurai said best song in video games, opera song in Final Fantasy 3 or 6 for the Super Nintendo. Yes. I mean, that is. You want to talk Final Fantasy, like that moment changed games, truly. That's the song was a huge part of that. Some other answers here. Azet says 1,000 words from Final Fantasy X-2, the best performed. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Our pal Bobby Blackwell says Persona 5, wake up, get out there. let's see. Black Compat says, I absolutely love the Last of Us Part 1 soundtrack. I have that one on vinyl. ZenMonkey11 says the instrumental at the start of Streets of Rage. I heard that at night on a cool windy day and it gave me life. I also love the Killer Instinct song. Oh my God, Killer Instinct's got such a good soundtrack. Hell yeah. Let's see. Some other comments here.
Story about Killer Instinct 2.
What's that?
When Dan and I were still just friends online, I was telling him how much I liked, I think it was Orchid's theme in Killer Instinct 2. And so he kept restarting his game over and over so he could get me a WAV file recorded of it.
Hmm.
And I still have that file somewhere.
Nice. Act Deft kind of tried to rephrase the question a little bit, who, and I don't know if this would give you guys different answers, but let me read ActDef's version of the question. What was the game that made you notice video game music as something more than just background noise? That's a neat question. I like that. A little different spin on it. What's the game that made you notice video game music? I would have to throw way fucking back, because remember, before I grew up on Nintendo Entertainment System, there was a period of time between the ages of about 5 and 9 where I grew up on the Commodore 64. And therefore, one of the first background songs I noticed that really made me notice the music was Pitfall 2, The Lost Caverns. And that was one of the first times a video game had a static song playing behind it. Because think about most of those Atari 2600 games back in the day. They were very like, boop, blip, brrr, like, you know, some of those unique noises the 2600 made. And it wasn't until you had Pitfall 2, specifically The Lost Caverns, where you had that theme song. Do, 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 do. And then when you would get hit by something, then the game would suddenly go into a minor key. Do, 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 boom, boom. Like, it got all sad. And it's hard not to notice that. And I would say that was the first for me. How about you guys? The game that made you notice video game music. Bobby says we're going to get DMCA'd. No, we're not.
I used to always, no, it didn't really, it wasn't that it was necessarily music, but the intro to Space Fury, where it almost seemed to me like the alien guy who was, you know, taunting you was singing to you. So that was one that did it for me early on. You know, there was even like a Mousetrap. I couldn't play it without the background music, because it was just sort of like set a rhythm to how I would play. And the music wasn't either dun 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 dun, you know, over like that. Because I'm just trying to think what else. I mean, I guess if I was going to get into the Nintendo era of stuff, it would probably have been playing through the Guardian Legend.
Yeah, that's such a
good
soundtrack. Because
I had a killer soundtrack in it.
So underappreciated.
But actually, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna say that it was R-Type, arcade R-Type. Because I love the first level music for R-Type, and that really made me just think, this is what video game music is.
Yeah. I was going to say, because Bobby in chat said there were some great Commodore 64 tracks that slapped. Yeah, another one that honestly, you wouldn't even think this, but Dragon's Lair and Dragon's Lair 2, which were both influenced by the original Dragon's Lair arcade game, but they're not a direct port of it, because obviously the Commodore 64 cannot handle those types of graphics. But the music in those games, especially the second one, which I think was Escape from Singe's Castle or something like that, is so good. Like, I remember being like 7 and hearing that for the first time, like just like going, whoa. And this was the whole time when I was getting into music, like taking organ. I didn't take piano lessons. I took organ lessons, because we had one of those like 70s Wurlitzer synthesizer, like church organs in our house. And it was awesome, because that was the thing people bought in the 70s that would do like the automatic bossa nova backing track by hitting the switch. And then, you know, do, do, do. Anyway, so that was fun. So, Loki, anything for you? The first game where you really noticed video game music?
Probably like The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. All right. Marissa in chat kind of wondering aloud, I'd love to know what the early composers in gaming were thinking, because so many soundtracks are masterpieces and they had to keep in mind how long people would be listening to these songs. Yeah, surely someone's made a documentary on this, but I would love to hear interviews with some of these like great song makers of old, like, you know, Koji Kondo and, you know, the people that really brought us, you know, a lot of the 8-bit music that we're all naming here.
I think Bobby and Dragon Samael basically nailed it. They were thinking, we only have 10K of space for audio production. And honestly, A lot of the early sound designers were really like, let's make it sound good and make it work with the game and make it fit.
True, true.
Now today is a different story, but
yeah.
And I think that some of, like, I remember when I got to meet Koji Kondo in 2006, And I thanked him for, you know, prolonging my interest in music, because he did the music for a lot of games that that were really, I would say, inspiring for me, and the music has really stuck with me. And I got to thank him at E3 that one year when they were doing what, Wii Music?
Yeah.
Like the preview for Wii Music. And he looked so surprised and delighted by it. So I was like, I guess they never did think that it was going to happen. And now, you know, just such talent in what he does. And I'm even going to say that whoever's doing the music for Animal Crossing this time around is really doing just, it's very interesting with Animal Crossing, is that the music in this particular one seems all like it's variations on the same theme, mm-hmm. whether or not it's in the same key or it has a switch, but it has, like, even my favorite music in the game, the 5 o'clock funk is what I call it, has that intro, you know, thing as a lick in that tune. Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to, not looking forward, but I really like when there's that sort of musical continuity in a game.
Yeah. You know, I think Marissa, kind of hearing all these answers and what the chat's saying about the limitations, is kind of having a wow moment, and says in chat, Marissa again says, limitations can really help creativity explode sometimes. Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. And Dragon Samael kind of adds to that, saying, it's astounding, though, when you're so limited in what you can make. You had to get that hook right away. That's another good point. You had to go right into the hook. So very, very interesting.
Have you seen what some cosplayers do on an incredible budget? Mm. And they do these amazing outfits that are all pretty much thrifted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that right there, you know, people who... I was actually watching, I sometimes like to watch those tiny home videos. And this one person took all of the scrap from his barn and built his wife an office. Yeah.
But
out of scrap.
But have you seen what LaLaurie did on a budget?
I don't know who that is.
No, we love her. We stan her. She's great. She's a wonderful,
I don't know who
lip
that
singer.
Is.
Drag Race? I thought you watched Drag Race.
LaLaurie? I just started. I don't know all their names yet.
Oh, okay. You'll get there.
I know no one. I know they kicked off Elliot, and then Elliot came back.
Yes. All right. You'll get there. All right. Okay. Moving on. Just because Sia Tiberian chat says, "Ouch!" I said we stan her. I'm just giving a little bit of a hard time. I can't, you know, do certain things either. All right. Anyway, moving on. I don't want to spoil, because I guess Jamie isn't all caught up yet. All right. Let's move on and talk about some last minute stories, if you guys have anything else to add.
Yeah, I was going to mention that the Battleborn servers have finally been deactivated.
Oh,
so now
yeah.
The game is not playable at all. Apparently, even that extended to the single player portion of the game. So you got yourself a wonderful little coffee or coaster now.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
Something random where apparently Pokemon Red is still being played inside of someone's Twitter avatar.
Oh, yeah. We had the original story about that a couple. Is still going, right?
Still going, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was still going on.
Anything else from Loki or Dark Saga?
That's all I had.
All right.
No, I didn't see anything.
All right. Well, then I guess we will wrap it up. Pixel Pox is pouring one out with pushing F for Battleborn in chat. All right. That's it. We're going to wrap things up here. And thank you guys so much for listening to our show tonight. We really appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for taking part. Thank you. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio tonight, tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't here, we can't put them out. So tell your friends, as long as they aren't shitbags, tell your friends. And you know if you have a friend who's a shitbag. But invite your cool friends to the show and hang out with us. And it's a good way to spend a Sunday night. A nice 5-star review wherever you found the show, whether it's iTunes or Spotify or wherever, goes a long way. A host on a site like Twitch, that goes a long way as well. Also, sharing on social media. Super appreciate that stuff. Also, I have to give a quick plug to the shop. If you really enjoyed the show tonight and you want to buy some merchandise that says VOG Network or OLR on it, please take a moment to swing by the store, vognetwork.com/shop, if you want to check out some stuff. And yes, we will add some more merchandise to that, hopefully in the next month or so. Just a few more things for you guys to check out.
Someone wants her lady shirts.
Yeah, so I said, give me some designs. We'll get some shirts. All right.
No, there's designs up there, and there's no lady shirt for it.
Oh, yeah. I said I would add one of the designs to a lady shirt. So sure, of course. But it's also my way to try to trick and get some more designs. All right.
I'll work on something.
All right, sounds good. All right, let's go around and get everybody's final thoughts. Loki, we'll start with you. Your final thought.
My final thought is Diamond Hands to the moon.
My final thought is let's hope crypto coin takes off, except I only put in like $50. I'm not expecting it to go anywhere.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like with Doge, I mean, it's at 3 cents right now. So even if it goes down to 1 cent, that's like that's 2/3 of the money that you put in. But
that's not the crypto I invested in. I knew that one would be too, blah, 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 you know, all over the map. So I did a different one that I just kind of did my own research. And I was like, all right, maybe this one will go up. Kind of just playing with it a little bit. All right.
We'll see.
Dark Soccer, your final thought.
I don't know. I don't have thoughts anymore. I have a series of random... time has dissolved to the point where I no longer have coherent thoughts. I just say whatever the fuck happens to come out without even processing it, you know? Yeah. I'm not ready for my staycation to be home, but I did have a little health scare that I am glad everything came through just fine. So... some people have been following me on Twitter, and thank you for all the support that you gave me. I had a little cancer scare. Everything came back benign, so hey.
Hooray. All right. That's going to do it. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Orange Lounge Radio and joining us tonight. We will be back here in 7 days. Yes, I understand there's stuff going on TV, but too bad. We're still doing our show as we always do. So we will see you next week. But until then, have a great week. Happy gaming. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VOGNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.